up, everybody? How are you? Welcome to Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank for the week of Monday. What are we at? January 23rd, 2012. Hello. For this episode, I'm going to interview my friend and colleague and comedian, David Taylor. He's a very funny comic. He's on Twitter now. He finally got on Twitter. ThisDavidTaylor.com. No, not ThisDavidTaylor.com. ThisDavidTaylor. Twitter at ThisDavidTaylor. Whatever. He's on there. He just writes funny jokes because luckily he's got no, he doesn't do the road at all. So he's got nothing to promote. So he just writes like four funny jokes a day. So go on there and follow him. In terms of my stand-up, I'll be in, I'm going to be in Mall of America this coming week, Wednesday through Sunday. Go to Rick Brunson's House of Comedy.net or go to my website, arithegreat.com. And on the side, there's links for tickets. Next week, I'll be in Phoenix with Ralphie May at Stand Up Live. I don't know what the website is for that. But, again, my website, arithegreat.com. They're on the side. And March 15th, I'm going back to Maryland. I'm going to be in Maryland, in Easton, Maryland, a place I've never been. I barely knew Easton was a city, if not for a dorm was named after them at the University of Maryland. It also might be a county, and I might be wrong. That's how little I know about Easton. But I'm playing there at the Avalon Theater, March 15th. So come out to that. I love playing near my hometown. And that's it, everybody. Dallas in April. Fucking maybe an Australian tour at some point. And who knows what else. By the way, you guys, if you want to listen, I don't know how people are listening to these, but it's available on iTunes. Go to Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank. It's available a direct download on my website. If you just want to click play, you just play it right there. Or you can get it on Stitcher. I guess I have my own channel on there. I don't use Stitcher that much, but I think it's really, really good for like cell phones. And that's it. I hope you guys are enjoying these. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank, number 43, I'm guessing. 43, maybe 43. Software Millionaire, David Taylor. Keep it on the beat.
Nerds getting rich. I said the nerds getting rich. Yeah, the nerds getting rich. We the platinum boys, you know we always killing shit. Nerds getting rich. I said the nerds getting rich. Yeah, nerds getting rich. We the platinum boys, you know we always killing shit. I'm ill, no time for fakers, bitch, I ball hard.
Hi, how are you, David? Welcome to the show.
Hello, Ari, how are you?
I'm good. This is David Taylor, everybody, my friend David Taylor.
Hi, I'm David Taylor.
So we're going to talk today about your time as a tech stock fucking millionaire.
I was a software millionaire in the 90s.
By the way, you're one of the poorest people I know now.
That is true. That is true. Before and after, totally impoverished.
So what happened? You graduated college?
I went to a school, Carnegie Mellon University.
They're good for theater and science, right?
Yes, they're good for theater and for the sciences. And as luck would have it,
Two completely separate types of people.
Yes, absolutely. And they never met. We never got to meet any actresses.
Oh, really? It was super separated?
It could not have been more separate. It was completely different groups. There were the humanities people who weren't very bright. There
what is that, English department?
Yeah, it's English the humanities department.
I just realized. He said they're not very bright. I was like, wait, what is that? The thing I majored in?
No, there are schools with excellent humanities departments. Oh. Harvard, for instance. Those people are very smart. Okay. Carnegie Mellon used to be called Carnegie Tech, and they should have just kept it that way.
Carnegie Tech, really?
Carnegie Tech, back in the day. So it was science majors, and then the really smart people were the computer scientists and the engineers. And those were – it was luck would have it. I went to college in the 90s when the internet was starting to explode.
And just starting.
What?
It was just starting?
I went to – my freshman year was 1993, and that was when I was introduced to email. That was – they were a little ahead of the curve.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't
– When did I start college? I graduated high school in 92. I think I started 94.
Yeah. Well, by 94 or 95, for example, I did a website in 1994 when I was learning how to do HTML just as a project, and it was called – what was it called? It was like How to Get Laid as a Nerd, and it was – my friend put it on Yahoo under the etiquette section, which was called How to Propagate Your Poor Traits Without Offending Your Mate, and I got all kinds of hits. I was a geek site of the day.
How to say that again?
How to Propagate Your Poor Traits Without Offending Your Mate.
That's that stupid witty shit you have to write in order to make it – that's why that fucking alternative comments hate me, because I don't write that witty shit. The same stuff. We're all talking about BJs, assholes.
The guy who wrote it is now – brilliant – is now in software. He has nothing to do with alternative comedy.
Okay.
Ron Yang, very, very smart guy. Anyway, the point is this. When I wrote that page, it got picked up by some online zine. And what they said in 1994 was, this is how, maybe 95, it was 94, 95, this is how the web used to be, man, when people just had pages. So even then, it was still considered.
Like they didn't know what was going on?
Well, even in the 1990s, companies were starting to get on board with it, and it was still considered a lot more corporate.
Yeah.
But that said, Carnegie Mellon was very way ahead of the curve. So a lot of computer science majors. And then come 1997, all these people had jobs. They were all doing very well.
What do you mean?
All my friends got out of college and then got jobs right at the beginning of the software boom.
This is engineering department?
Engineering, computer science. They were all computer.
Okay.
Essentially, it's the same.
And they all got jobs at where?
Well, as it turns out, several of my friends got jobs at a company called SixDOS in Pittsburgh, and that was where I first worked. I was incompetent at software. I'll let you know.
Right.
I was pretty terrible. Like, I used to go to my – Ron worked with me in Pittsburgh, I would go to him and ask – because I didn't major in computer science. I majored in chemistry and economics.
Right. It has nothing to do with that
stuff. Nothing to do with it. And I would go to Ron and I would say, Ron, how do I do this assignment that's been set out for me?
Yeah, you find a nerd to help you.
Well, Ron was a friend. It wasn't like – I'm not a girl. Like, Ron was like a peer.
Yeah. You find a nerd friend.
Yes.
Yeah, right. You're not a girl. You're not using him or anything.
So Ron would say, well – he'd try to teach me. He'd say, well, do you understand this incredibly basic concept? And I would say, no, I don't understand that at all. And he'd say, do you understand this even more basic concept? And I would say – no, and he still got me. I don't understand it. Around basic concept number three, he would just say, let me write you some sample code. And he would just do my homework
and
for me.
Like, awesome. Sounds great.
It's great. It's great. They kept me around mostly because
Who's they? Your friends? The company. Oh.
In Pittsburgh.
Wait, this is after you already got the job?
This is a different job. This is job number one.
I thought you were talking about in college.
No, this is in college. This is when I was working.
How did you get the job?
How did I get the job? Ron got me the job. Ron and
you said this would be a good guy?
Yeah, well, I was dating this girl named Rachel, who I had stolen from Ron, and somehow Rachel and
Ron... You stole Rachel from Ron?
Yes. Shocking, because I'm ugly, and Ron is quite handsome. But
this guy named Yang is handsome.
That's the shocking thing. Ron Yang is a 6'2" guy who's so handsome. Women,
is he half Arab?
No, I mean, he's all Arab, he's all Asian.
Really?
Women used to come up to him in the mall and say, you look like this soap opera actor.
Really?
Yes. I don't know if we're going to find any pictures of him.
Images. But, how many Ron Yangs could there be?
I want you to stop and think about it.
On Google Images, I'm joking. On Google Images, like 40 on the first page.
Yes.
40 different Ron Yangs. And a couple of them are white.
Ron is, let's see here.
What else can I put in about him that it would show up here?
Here's the thing. Ron isn't in software, so it's really impossible. Like, they're just
Carnegie Mellon.
Really tough to find him. No, that's not going to be good enough. Anyway, Ron got me the job. God bless him. And then when I was at the job, I think they kept me around because I was one of the few people. I was like the Ron whisperer. I understood what was going on.
Oh.
So anyway, the point is this.
The bosses knew you couldn't do shit, but they're like, yeah.
Yeah. And then eventually I sort of picked up this and that. But I worked there for like 14, 15 months. And eventually they came to me and they said they thought, well, one day I'm going to pick it up. I won't be lazy and I'll learn.
Because they thought he must have some expertise.
Well, they also thought that, you know what, one day I won't be as lazy. But here's why I lost that job. I was not doing much work, but they thought, well, maybe he's down. Maybe he'll figure it out and just really work hard one day.
Yeah.
And then we were all around the office, and we had a contest. We had a conversation. How fast could you run a mile in high school? Now, I was like 22. The rest of these guys were like 32. So they said, how fast could you run a mile? And I said, I think I could beat everyone here. So we set a day 6 weeks in advance to run a mile.
So everybody could train?
And could train. Nobody trained with one exception. That exception was me. Every night I went to the track and sprinted and got – so we got 6 weeks later. We got to the track and I hustled everyone and then pretended I was tired and then just wailed on everyone. Just beat the hell out of everybody.
Pretend you were tired?
When I was doing the warm-up lap, I'm like, I don't know if I can continue to drum up bets.
Oh, nice.
Then I just wailed on everybody and the whole company was there and my boss looked at me and said, he trained for this. And that was the moment he realized I would never work hard at software.
Oh, because you're like, oh, he's capable of working hard.
Yes, just not at this. And I was fired 2 weeks later.
Really?
Yes.
Because you beat them all?
Because they realized what they had.
Do you think any of it was because they were pissed off that you beat them all after you talked trash
about
how you'd beat
them?
Nobody
really cared. The problem is also that was a job where they kept moving people into my office to try to get them to
rub off on you?
Yes. And the problem was the exact opposite occurred.
Yeah.
So we had one guy, Brad, who was really like a talented guy who sat down. They moved him into my office and after day one, it was real uncomfortable. Day two, we started chatting. By day five, we'd have long conversations about who was gay in the office, and we'd play loud Tony Robbins. And then day six, Brad was gone.
Really?
Yeah, he said, I'm having too much fun. I got to go, man.
Like he couldn't keep up with your level.
No, it's more that he was not getting any work done because he was going over, you know, so he just moved back. The point is that work is boring. It's supposed to be boring.
Yeah, there was an episode of Married with Children where...
Yes, this is much like that one.
Where Peg Bundy got a personal trainer.
Where the personal trainer died because he had enough cholesterol in his heart to dam the mighty Mississippi.
Yeah, they were saying like, oh, he'll shape you up, Peg.
Yes.
And so she goes, I just like to sit on the couch, eat, and eat...
Bonbons,
and eat bonbons. And he was like, he had one bonbon, that guy.
And he died.
He was like, gone. He started like sitting on the couch eating bonbons.
Yes,
like,
oh. And the comparison was like the Bundys were like cockroaches.
Well, oh, because they'll survive.
Yes, they'll survive anything. They'll survive. Yeah, that was a fine episode of Married with
Children. Yeah, you can't find it on YouTube. I don't know what it is.
Stupid rights issues.
But they have other stuff on there. It's all in German, actually. Oh, wow. All the Married with Children stuff. If you enter Peg Bundy,
Kinder.
Personal trainer.
Anyway, the point is this. Yeah. So I was an objectively not...
Who's off Bud Bundy, revered?
So I was objectively not competent.
Yeah.
So long story short, they fired me in Pittsburgh, which they eventually had to do, which I don't blame them for. They were screaming at me. They brought one woman into my office, and she just would scream at me for hours and hours. Yeah, she'd scream at me to the point, and I would just stare at my checkbook and think, I'm doing this for you. And my friend walked in and
You're doing this for your checkbook?
Yeah. My friend walked in and saw this, me staring at a checkbook, and the woman screaming. He said, I know she's talking to you. You weren't acknowledging her. So anyway, the point is.
So when someone just keeps yelling at you, you're like, I'm not changing for you. Why are you wasting your breath?
Yeah, exactly.
It's annoying both of us. We have to wait for you to finish yelling so I can not listen.
I knew they were going to fire me when you can always tell somebody's going to fire you when they do this. They start writing down what you're doing wrong and handing it to you on a piece of paper.
Trail of paper.
The paper trail.
Yeah.
Anytime anybody has that happen, I say, you're going to get fired, so just enjoy the money.
They talked about the government. I worked at government a couple times.
Oh, government has an impossible time firing anybody.
They said you can't get fired. You could almost rape.
That's why it's so hard to get a job working for
the government. Yeah.
Because, yeah.
My friend Avi worked for the patent office. Mm-hmm. And that'd be a good topic. He saw so many things there. And, he was like, it's so hard to get fired. He was a graduate of Michigan engineering. He goes, he was pretty competent. He goes, there's some people, he goes, I don't know how they got the job here. He goes, Ari, you didn't graduate from engineering, so you couldn't get a job. But you're dumb, and you're way smarter than them. And I was like, oh. He goes, they just can't get fired. No one can fire anybody.
Yeah, that's the joy of government labor. That's why people do it. It pays less, but it's secure. And secure means you don't have to do anything. Well, software was a little more secure. It wasn't as secure as government, but at that point, it was such...
Great pension, too. You know the government's not going to go out of business.
At that point, labor was a huge seller's market in Pittsburgh. They were having a hard time finding people. Everybody wanted to go to San Francisco.
How much did you make at that time?
That point, I started off with that job in 1994. Seven. They hired me at $30,000. Then they raised me to $40,000, and it was great.
Okay,
My rent was $500 for a $2-bedroom apartment. It was
$500
for a $2-bedroom apartment.
Wow, that's
big
so cheap.
$2-bedroom apartment.
When was this? 1997.
1997 to 1999. Not true. 1998 to 1999. Because I spent a year unemployed just reading about art.
So it's 13 years ago.
13, 14
Wait,
years
a
ago.
A year after you graduated college?
A year after graduated college.
A lot of people do that, where they're like, I'm looking, but you're not really looking that far.
I looked, but, well, here's the thing. I was dating a girl who supported me.
Rachel?
Yes. The lovely Rachel would buy my meals. I'll always be grateful. She'd always pick me up at night, and she'd say, where are we going to go? I go, we're going to the Olive Garden. And she'd say, the Olive Garden's disgusting. Now, the Olive Garden is disgusting.
Yeah.
By now, I never go there. But I would always say, no, I want to go to the Olive Garden. She'd go, I want to go to the Olive Garden. Then we would go. And then she would pay for the meal. And for that, she deserves a special spot in heaven. Boy, she hated the Olive Garden. Anyway, the point is that I got the job. Anyway, I replaced her. And then they eventually fired me. So then I followed her out to San Francisco. And by followed her out, I mean she had broken up with me and didn't want me out there.
And but you've chased her?
More or less. That's also where all my friends were. And that's where I wanted to be.
Yeah.
So I had a little bit of money. I backpacked through Europe for a couple months. So then I was like, where the fuck do I go? So I ended up in San Francisco. So at that point, I have a job where I worked for a year.
Yeah.
Not well. I have degrees in chemistry and economics, no computer science background.
Slow down a little bit.
No computer science background, a job, you know, and I have no connections, really, no ability to get a job. But I do have a couple friends in San Francisco, and I was staying on a friend's couch. And that's when a couple of my friends, including Ron, mentioned that the company they were working for was hiring.
Just anything, just hiring.
Hiring software people.
Okay.
Now
you're not a software person.
I'm terrible at it.
But you do have a year of experience.
Year of experience.
Doing a shitty job.
Doing
this
a shitty
job. This is how people fail up.
At a bad company.
This is how people fail up.
Classic case.
All they heard is, oh, he's done it for a year.
Well, here's the thing. What happened was they were having a conversation in their break room one day, and they said, we're hiring a lot of incompetent people. And then they said, we're going to hire incompetent people. Why don't we hire our incompetent friends?
Oh.
That is how I got brought in for an interview.
Oh.
So the joke is this. The company was...
Because fuck, the company's screwed up anyway. Let's screw it up our way.
Yeah, the point is they had really, really, really...
Which company was this?
Epiphany.
Wait. Is that the company I interviewed with?
No, you interviewed at Trilogy in Austin.
Trilogy,
Epiphany
yeah.
and Trilogy were both mentioned in a Rolling Stone article, though.
That's probably where I mixed the two up.
About how they were both in – the Rolling Stone article was about companies that hire the top talent because at that point, Epiphany was known for getting only the top talent.
Really? Even though they were hiring incompetent people?
Well, they'd
but they were known
incompetent
for.
People. The people – the core of people they hired were fantastically talented, and that included several of my friends who were objectively –
Like Ron
brilliant.
Yang.
Ron Yang.
Yeah.
Adam Tableman, brilliant people.
Oh, there, Tableman.
Yes, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant people.
By the way, Tableman, you got Tableman's girlfriend at the time to help represent me in that case against
Yes.
I was representing this guy in court, this crazy person.
Well, not representing, you were...
I lied to him and told him I'd represent all his interests.
Yes, you were a defendant.
Yeah, I was representing him pro bono, and then at some point, it just got too annoying. He would call me all the time. It got too annoying. So I was like, I don't want to do it anymore. And he goes, well, I'm going to sue you. I'm like, well, sue me? I gave you free labor. Whatever. I helped you sue the San Diego State Hospital.
It's ironic that he was able to sue you when you had to help him sue somebody
else. Yeah, he's trying to sue John Edwards. Well, he wanted to sue John Edwards for being a false prophet. And I was like, I remember going like, but why do you sue him? Like, why are you getting the money? And he goes, because he's a false prophet. And I was like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll take that case.
This is usually how prisoners file lawsuits.
You know, just like, fuck it, anybody.
He was outside.
He thought he was the king of kings, and he was going to be the next. He goes, I can't pay you now, but when I become king of kings, I can give you untold riches. I was like, that sounds like a deal. Anyway, he just sent me a last summary or whatever, last try. And it was like 2 years ago he sent me. I just found it. I hadn't opened it yet. I just opened it. Why did I mention that? Oh, because Tableman.
Tableman's girlfriend.
His girlfriend represented me. Yeah.
So Tableman, yes. He and Ron, brilliant, brilliant people, and they have this incompetent friend, me. So they bring me in for interviews. Now, I will say this. We got through the interview process. You interview like four or five people.
Hold on. I'm going to put some pause for a second. No, not Mark. Pause. All right. Sorry. That was my mechanic.
So when last we were about to interview. About to interview.
At the second company. At Abilify.
Second company. Not at Abilify.
Epiphany.
Epiphany. The one. So Epiphany.
I've become like Joe Diaz. As I'm getting older, I barely remember. I remember sounds that sound like the company or the name that I knew of.
That's not older. That's marijuana years.
Oh, yeah. Probably that.
So I'm about to interview Epiphany. And Epiphany, by the way, top talent, huge hit.
Yeah.
Epiphany had already gone public at this point, and the story was that Epiphany had gone public, and everybody got super rich, and Adam went to a meeting of some board, like some
Adam
board,
Tableman.
Adam Tableman, there was some giant boardroom meeting or something, all in glass. Well,
Adam Tableman is so smart. I just should say this, that he just was still a college student, like 10 years later. He was just getting free rides, right?
Well, he's a grad student now, but he got the second highest graduate score in the graduate department at UCLA Physics makes you take a test.
Yeah.
You need to it's called the quals.
The quals.
Everybody has to take it. Who's in UCLA's physics department is top 10. Adam got like the second highest score in 31 years. Some crazy
really?
High score.
So he just went on free rides.
He's a graduate student. He's like after he got rich, you get a little bit of money when you're a graduate student in science.
Oh,
you
I thought he
free.
Stayed in school. He got a job first and then went back to school.
Yeah.
Oh.
So Tableman pounded on the glass room wall and screamed and pointed at a sign at him that said "millionaire."
Uh-huh.
He taped to his shirt. It was misspelled. He said they went crazy cheering because at that point everybody was just so happy because everybody got rich in that company that day.
When?
That was months before I joined.
Oh, okay.
So at that point, I had given up on any chance.
Why did they get – because they went public?
They went public. The way it works is you get stock options.
That was a
They're
big thing.
Set at the amount of money that the stock is worth when you joined. So if you joined before somebody IPOs, Adam's stocks were worth a couple pennies.
Uh-huh.
That's how much you had to pay. And then when it went public, it went up to like 80. Like,
so he had to pay a couple of pennies for $80 stocks?
Yes. The point is he was now worth on paper.
Yeah.
millions and millions of dollars because of a lot of stocks. Now, when I joined, the stock was at 80. Now, I'd give it up on any hope of getting rich, but that's getting ahead of ourselves. I still have to get the job, which I was mostly excited about because it's a job. So they bring me an interview, and I go through a couple of people, you know, person one. I sort of chat, explain what I did, and I sort of fogged them through, you know, because people...
What do you mean?
Well, they're like, well, what'd you work on? I said, well, client side, you know, programming. You know what? It, you know, for a while, you learn...
You could say at least what I worked on, but you didn't work on it.
Well, technically what I did. You know, yes, you were able to bullshit your way through.
Yeah.
Well, but nobody asked me anything too technical until we get to the last interview. Now, the last interview was with an Indian girl named Manira. Manira liked everybody.
Yeah.
She's the sweetest girl in the world. So we get to...
She must have hated you at some point.
Yes. That's the reason I bring that up. Manira, we get to the interview. Okay. I go through. We're chatting. We're talking. We get... this is the last interview of the day, and everything's looking pretty good.
Yeah.
Manira then says to me, David, have you had a brain teaser yet? I said, no, I haven't. Now, brain teasers are what software companies would give to prove to themselves that their employees were the smartest people in the world.
Yeah.
They would give these elaborate problems that you were supposed to solve because they wanted to, quote, see how you thought, unquote. Some classic examples are, why is a manhole cover round? Give three examples.
What do you mean three examples?
Three reasons, rather, why a manhole covers round.
Yeah. My friend got one of these.
Which
one? Tell you that?
Yeah, no, which one?
What is the angle of the hands on a clock at 3:15?
Well, that's pretty easy because it's 360 degrees, yeah. And then it's 3:15 is like, that would actually be zero.
No.
Wait, 3 and 3:15, yeah, it would be zero.
No.
What is it? Because because the 3 is a little
past,
bit.
Yeah, 15 minutes, okay, the 3 has moved a little bit.
Yeah.
It was Jason Zuckerman. He said he looked at the guy for about 35 minutes.
Yeah.
And then he just goes,
beats the fuck out of me.
No, either he said zero or he said 90 degrees. And the guy was like, you took all that time to come up with that? And he goes, I just kept hoping you would stop me.
Okay, well, you want to know what my problem was?
What?
There are 10 pirates.
Yeah.
And they have 100 pieces of gold.
Uh-huh.
Now, the pirates are arranged from tallest to shortest. The first pirate presents his plan to the other pirates.
Pirates are arranged from tallest?
Tallest, shortest. You know, there's first pirate to last pirate.
Okay.
Arbitrarily.
Okay.
The first pirate presents his pirates to all the rest of the pirates. Okay.
Yeah.
He presents his plan for how the gold will be distributed. If they vote, if more than half or more pirates vote for his plan, the plan is adopted. If they don't, that pirate is executed and they go to the next pirate.
Oh.
How is the gold distributed?
It's all given to the last pirate?
You have to solve the goddamn gold. I say the way it works is this. You realize I'm going to start from – you have this – so I thought about it for a second and I looked at her and I said – Well, first I said, well, what are the priorities? We have to know if do the pirates love gold?
Yeah, are they like
– or are they bloodthirsty?
Oh, yeah.
She said, that's a great question. I said, I thought about it for a second.
Damn, you're like ahead of the curve on that.
Yeah, I thought about it for a second. I said, well, what if we work backwards? So what if we start from the last pirate and figure out, well, if there's – okay, let's say the last
– If he's the last one alive, then he's like, I got all the gold. No one's going to vote against me.
The point is this. Remember, half the people have to vote. So if you get on the last two pirates, whatever plan pirate number two adopts will automatically be adopted. So pirate number one will get no goddamn gold.
Oh.
So pirate number one, you realize, will just be happy with one piece of gold.
Yeah. He goes, I'll get one. I'll give you 99 to number two.
Well, no, number two will never vote for anything because he's just waiting for that moment where he can get his plan and then he gets all the gold.
You can never
give pirate plan number two enough gold.
So you'd have to give number three a bunch.
You give pirate number one a little bit of gold, pirate number two no gold because he's never going to vote for the plan.
Guy.
And basically, you step it backwards. Okay, so, and she looked at me and she later told somebody, she said, that's the best I've ever seen anybody solve that brain teaser.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now,
sounds legit.
I know.
The way it did it. It was like, yeah, you're right.
Isn't it? You know, want to know how I figured it out?
How?
The night before, Ron Yang said, they're probably going to give you a brain teaser. And I said, well, which one are they going to give me? He goes, I don't know. Pirate gold, maybe? Well, how the hell do you do that? He tells me the pirate plan. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Let me slow it down again.
He had to explain it to me five or six times. And I'm like, what? He goes, he says, you know what? Forget it. I'm not going to. I go, just do it, just do it, Ron. I might need to know it. He goes, yeah, okay, fine. He explains it to me. I'm like, okay. That's the best acting I've done in my 10-year acting career.
Wow.
The pause when I said, wait a second. She goes, well, have you heard about the Pirate's Gold? And I said, Pirate's Gold? Do tell. And then I realized she had
gold.
Said,
what do those words mean together? I've never. Why would those two words be in a sentence at the same time? It's ridiculous, lady. What are you getting at?
Then also I realized she had told me the priorities, so I had to be like, wait a second. What are the? Because Ron is like, here are the priorities.
Yeah.
So I'm like, wait, what are the priorities? I'm like,
and that's a great one too. It's like how much. Here's my problem that I'm watching movies lately.
Yeah.
And there's a movie where who's the guy that got the hooker? The white guy that got the hooker?
Hugh Grant.
Hugh Grant. He's in a movie with some old guy. And the old guy, they're both doctors.
Yeah.
And the older guy.
This is Extreme Measures with Gene Hackman.
Yeah. Thank you. The old guy, David, by the way, is one of my lifelines. Before the internet was so readily available on computers, on phones, whenever I had a question, I'm like, let me ask David before I get to a computer myself. I would just call you. You and Avi Lerner. Those are the two lifelines I had. But so he had this thing where Hugh Grant found out that Gene Hackman was operating, was testing on homeless people.
Yes, that was.
And he was like, "This is, you got to be shut down immediately. I'm going to call the cops." And he's like, "And Hugh, what's the older guy's name?
Gene Hackman."
Gene Hackman was like, gave this long diatribe about how you know you got to become. It's pretty much eugenics, I guess. It's partly that where it's like you got to think about the bigger picture.
It's the classic debate about medical research versus the value of
the human life.
One,
but my
all.
Problem was, I agreed with Hackman. I was like, yeah, they're just homeless people. What do you mean? Hugh, shut up, man. He's going to solve a fucking cure to something. It's just homeless guys, man. They're living on the fucking street.
Well,
let it go.
Maybe. Like.
So then I get that now. It's like, what are the priorities? Like, how much is a homeless person's life worth?
How much is the gold more valuable, or do they just want to kill everybody? So, yeah, that was the moment where
this is legit medical research.
I had to turn.
It's not Jews they're operating on. It's fucking homeless people.
See, maybe Hugh Grant didn't do a good enough job of presenting
his side of the
argument.
I was like, wait a minute.
It's
hold
tough
on.
Gene Hackman was the coach in Hoosiers. I mean, he's done some good work.
He knows how to act. And if
it's
he's like,
tough.
If you ask him a place like, this is what I really believe,
he was Lex Luthor. I was thinking the planet should be destroyed. Destroyed in Superman when he was going against Christopher Reeve.
Yeah. Or this guy should drink before games. He's better off.
So, yeah, anyway, I had to turn to stop from laughing, but also to think real hard. And the moment I'll always remember this, because this was my million-dollar moment when I said, what if we work backwards? I'm thinking, she's going to know. She's going to fucking know. And she said, yes. And I'm like, you are going to get this
job. Oh, wow. Because even really smart people are idiots, too.
Hey, I would have gotten tricked also. Nobody thinks.
They don't think someone's being devious.
Also, you have to understand, they really believed in the sanctity of the brain teaser. This was the problem that was going to pick out the most brilliant of brilliant.
And my friend Jason Zuckerman, when he took the clock degrees at 15, they said later, they only want to see how you're not supposed to be able to get it.
Figure that out. It's pretty
easy. But it wasn't like a math guy. It wasn't like a math or engineering. Like,
if it's a quarter,
job.
Then it would be a quarter of a quarter. So I mean, it's like that'd
be one
like
quarter
9 degrees.
Of a 60th.
It's 9 degrees. I think
it's what?
I believe it
nine
would be,
degrees.
Not 9 degrees. Yeah, 9. Let's see here. A quarter of a quarter.
It's a quarter of a 60th. No, it's not a quarter.
No.
It's a quarter of a 12th.
It's 1/12 of 90.
1/12 of 90?
Yes, wouldn't it be? Let's see here.
Well, at whatever it should be, if they're both at 3, it's 15 minutes. It's 1/4 of a 12th past the 3.
It's a quarter of a quarter of 90, so 1/16 of 90, so around 5 degrees.
Quarter of a quarter of 90. Where's 90?
4 out of 90, because the point is each – okay, so you have a 90 degrees. There are 4 chunks of 90 degrees. You see what I'm saying? And it went 1/4 of one of those 4 chunks
past
of 90 degrees.
Past 90 degrees. No, past 0 degrees.
All right, here's the point.
Yeah.
It starts at 0.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, let's assume that
at
3 to
12,
4.
At 12 o'clock,
figure out how many
zero.
Degrees,
at 12 o'clock, it's 0.
Also, but no, just figure out how many degrees is 3 to 4.
Oh, that's 1/12 of 180.
Yeah, 1/12 of 360.
360, yeah.
Or 1/4 of 90.
Okay.
And
wait, 1/12 of 360 or 1/4 of 90?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Wait.
Wait, no, it wouldn't be.
No, it's not
that. 1/12? I guess it would be. Then 1/3 of that? Oh, now I'm confused. 1/3 of 90. Let's see here. 1/2. Oh, yeah, 1/3 of 90. Okay, 1/3
of 90.
Then it's 20 degrees.
Yeah.
And then it goes 1/4 of 20 degrees.
Okay, so 5 degrees.
Yeah.
So it's 5 degrees.
So it is 5 degrees.
So every 15 minutes is 5 degrees around. And
every 15 minutes, an hour hand goes 5 degrees.
Okay. And so 5 times.
Well, the point is it was even and the 3 moved. So
they were 5 times what would be 360?
5 times, now I'm thinking, now, God, I should know that. 72.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
So 72. So there's 72 quarters in a clock? Quarter of an hour?
No, it can't be. Now I'm confused. God damn it, now I'm confused. 5 times 72 is 360. That is true.
5 times 72 is 360.
Yes.
Okay, so yeah, it works then.
Okay.
Okay, so back to, sorry.
Back to, yeah, this
yeah,
is how.
Yeah, but his thing was, he's like, you're not supposed to be able to get it. As hard as it was for you, yeah. You're smart.
I would, if you gave me a pencil and paper, I could have, yes. But
the point was to see how you react under pressure.
That Pirate's Gold thing. So I realized, holy shit, David, you're going to get this fucking job. And then, so they came to me at the end of the day. They said, how much do you want in salary? And I said, I thought about this and I think $60,000 would be fair. And I thought, man, that's asking for a lot of money.
Yeah.
And they said to me, well, we have to give you 72 since everybody makes 72. And I said, I can take that.
Yeah.
And that's how I end up making $72,000 a year.
Wow.
After making very little in Pittsburgh.
After making nothing and then 30. 30
yeah, and
40.
Then 40. Yeah. So then I got hired for the job. Now, you have to understand, there were a few people that were not entirely competent. There were some crazy people. There was one guy named Jim who introduced himself to me. He said, David, I'm the fuck up around here. And I thought, Jim, there's a new sheriff in town. But I didn't say that because I thought, how long can we last? Every moment I was at that job, I thought, I just want to last as long as I can and save my money because I don't want to do this forever and I want to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
So when I was living on my friend's couch for a couple months, and I was making twice as much as the two of them were combined because they were grad students. So I was living for free for a couple months, just saving cash money.
Yeah.
Eventually, I had to move to San Francisco into the city, and it was a three-bedroom for $3,600, and we were too lazy to find a third person. So we just split up the rent.
Yeah.
It's three
too
for
lazy.
Yeah. Too lazy. So I remember walking down the street, and I looked at my landlord had a Mercedes or BMW, and I said to my roommate, I said, wow, he's got a BMW. Yeah, that's an expensive car. He said, you know, you could afford that. And I said, that's ridiculous. Because I realized.
Extra $32,000 a year.
I know, but I realized I'm not going to make money for this much longer. I knew it was a temp job.
You knew ahead of time? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I knew it. So I just, you know, so I would go to meetings and he'd be like, what are you working on? And I would say, oh, I'm working on this. And my friends in the meeting would just snicker.
Because they knew you were a fucker.
They knew
I
was doing. There was a point about. At some point, my boss pulled me into an office and he said, David, it's been 4 months and we haven't seen a single tangible result.
What were you supposed to be doing?
This and that.
What?
You know, working on stuff, learning stuff. And he said, 4 months, you haven't seen a single tangible result. I looked at him, I said, Jonas, it's only been 3.5. And he did not know how to handle it.
Yeah.
He just looked at me. I told people that story and they laughed. Now, at this point, enough was going on that I was able to sort of hide. We were trying to make.
I got in a fight with unemployment recently, by the way.
Really?
Because they're like, why'd your thing come back so late? Which is the reason I send it back late sometimes, the forms, is because I'm lazy. And I was like, cool, I'll get to that later. But if you send it over a few weeks, then it's a problem. So this time, every once in a while, usually I'll say, yeah, it's my fault, and I'll just lose a week of unemployment. But sometimes I'll be like, no, I fucking sent it. It was the mail.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, it took a month. And I'm like, no way. No way did it take a month. Like, sometimes they predate it, so you lose a couple days there. But I'm like, there's no fucking way. I mailed it pretty quickly. I know I waited like 5-10 days, but not that long.
So you don't. So somebody else.
And he goes, yeah, it's right here. It's like we received it on November 21st. And I was like, when was the due date? He goes, October 31st. And I was like, well, first of all, that's 3 weeks. He goes, well, it's almost a month. I'm like, no, it's 3 weeks. And he goes like, well, I mean, it's pretty close to a month. I'm like, no, dude, day one is November 1st. Day 2 is November 2nd. Yeah. Day 3, can we keep going? Yeah. Day 3 is November 3rd. Day 21 is November 21st. That's 3 weeks. He goes, all right, well, almost a month. I'm like, no, just stop. Please stop saying that. Please start saying 3 weeks because it's exactly 3 weeks.
You're upset that the guy on unemployment was as haphazard as you were.
Yeah, exactly. And I lost my fucking week, but I deserved it.
Yeah.
I guess.
So, yeah, at that point, I was just trying to stay as long as possible.
Yeah.
Now, I was able to hide. And this is the joke about this job, is that as I was sitting there waiting, I knew that the stock would never be worth anything.
Your stock? What did you start at?
I started at 80.
Yeah.
Well, what started to happen was you look over at the fucking stock ticker, and this stock was going crazy.
Really?
It starts moving up. We're like noticing. It was you start.
So everyone else got it at pennies.
Pennies.
No, wait. Does that mean you have to then give them the pennies in order to get the stock?
You can. Whenever you want to exercise the option, you give them the pennies and then you can sell.
And your original price was how much you had to pay for it.
Yes.
This is like when you lease a car. They give you a price at the end of the lease.
Yeah,
you say you owe $7,245.
Yeah.
If you don't think it's worth that, you can just give it back to us. If you
that's
think it's
exactly
worth more than
the
that,
choice.
Keep it.
So
pay for it.
This is how crazy it was. You have people that click on it, and all of a sudden it's one price. You click on it again a couple minutes later, it's gone up $5.
Oh, wow.
This is like some fantasy world. So the stock.
Do you have to cash in before you get fired?
Well, that's the point. You get to a year, you get a quarter of your shares. But if you don't get to a year, you get nothing.
Oh, so now you had to make it to a year.
Uh-huh.
And now you're like, now it's worth it. I'm not paying $80 for $80 stocks.
Well,
I'm paying $80 for...
I knew very well I wasn't going to make it to a year.
Oh.
But I watched it, so the stocks went up a little. But I'm thinking that's not really worth it. Stocks went up to 100. That's fine. That's not a little bit of money. 5,000 shares, not bad.
25% extra?
100 and 120, 130. The stock made it up to 330.
Wow, from 80?
Yes. I looked at my computer one day,
quadrupling,
and I realized I'm worth $1.2 million in unvested stock options. I am a millionaire.
Wow.
On paper.
Now, because I told my friends to make it to the year.
Yeah, I told my friends. I go, well, I'm a million. I said it's only on paper. They said that's what money's printed on. I go, that count it. Until that moment,
yeah.
We would go and play basketball. We played basketball at a public park, and we're all 10 of us are playing. And somebody comes up and goes, "Where do you guys? And you guys know each other?" So we work at Epiphany, and they go, "Epiphany, you guys are all millionaires." And they looked at me and they go, "Well, most of us are."
And you're like, "Shut up, guys."
They were worth. But here's the.
They'd already made it to the year.
They had already made it to the year, and they also have money shares. They were worth $20, $30 million.
Oh.
And these were freaks. Like, one, the guy who had said most of us are was a guy who got in a 1600 on his SATs. You know,
yeah,
those guys.
Back when it mattered.
Yeah.
Back
and
when
then he got
they didn't lower the score by 200 points.
He was a freak. So, this is when I realized that I wasn't going to stick around, besides the fact that it didn't work. We were all sitting around a table one night. It's like Friday night. And I look around. This is right around the time I'd made the $1 million.
Yeah.
And, I'd call my mom. I said, "Mom, I'm a millionaire." She said, "Don't count your chickens." I said, "This is as close as we're going to get to chickens, so just accept it." And I looked around the table and I realized we had about $80 million in net worth at the table.
Yeah.
And none of us could get a date.
Uh-huh.
Not a single one of us could. I'm like, something's got to change. I got to go, man. So.
You quit?
No, I did not quit.
Oh.
I kept going.
Now, how long did you last?
6 months.
Oh.
6 months. Now, I kept crawling through. And the thing is, like.
That's really not close. I know it's only 6 months away, but it's 6 months out of a year. That's just not.
No. Close. If I'd done anything, I could have lasted, but I did
nothing.
They were telling me – that's the funny thing, too, is that they kept trying to motivate me. And that's the thing. They had a hard time. This is the problem with –
You're like, it wasn't their fault.
With Internet Millions was that they had these people – the people never talk about this. The CEOs loathed the developers.
Why?
Because developers were worth $20, $30 million. So first of all, they're these nerds who come out like punks, come out of college and have all this money, whereas the CEOs had to crawl through all this shit to get to where they
start up a company.
Well, they didn't start up the company. They show up as talent. They get hired as talent. But the point is they had to spend 20 years sucking dick.
So they thought they should be worth more?
Well, the point is they didn't think that these nerds should have any money. Then also, you have a problem as...
CEOs also got vested, right?
CEOs have plenty of money, but they didn't want the nerds to have any money. But then there was an extra thing, too, is your bosses would try to motivate you with this, like, well, we're going to promote you, or, well, we'll give you a raise that's $5,000 a year. And people look at them and say,
I'm worth $12
million. $20 million. You're not going to motivate me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Tableman, I remember, would get annoyed because everybody was getting promoted to senior engineer, and he just wanted it. He didn't care about the money. He was just annoyed. So we had a boss. At one point, our boss was screaming at us. It's a huge boardroom. And the boss is yelling. He's screaming at us about how this is a multi-billion dollar company and I am not going to miss product because you guys can't get it to fucking together.
What do you mean miss product?
Somehow like couldn't make the product release date.
Yeah.
I'm not going to miss this. You can fuck. He is screaming at us and the room is totally silent.
Yeah.
Totally silent. Adam at this point is just making, playing around with the little, these speaker phones. They have these little extensions for the speaker phones. So Adam raises his hand.
Yeah.
And the guy goes, "What do you want, Adam?" And Adam said, "Look, I made a little stuffed animal out of the speakerphone. I call him Clammy." And it was actually a little clam with two pieces of paper for eyes. Look, and he goes, "Clammy," makes a little mouth. He goes, "Clammy."
So disrespectful.
And he said, "Clammy will be promoted to senior engineer before I am." And the guy stares at me, and I thought that my hair was going to catch on fire. Sitting next to Adam. That's how intense his gaze was.
Wow.
And he just stirred, and his head shook. But you know why he had to take it?
Why?
Because Adam was talented.
He needed him.
He needed him.
He was good.
He was good.
Why didn't he promote him?
Because Adam was the type of person who would raise his hand at boardroom meetings.
So, like, no, you're not playing that game. I'd rather promote my friend.
Clammy. Yes, Clammy.
The kiss-ups they'll promote.
Yes.
That's the failing up, too.
Absolutely.
You go for your friends over talent.
So Jim Wang, who had been called himself the biggest fuck-up.
Suicide Wang?
No, not Suicide Wang. That was a different Wang. So Jim was a guy who had – maybe I should try to bleep out the last name. Jim took his money and spent it on buying handguns.
Oh, really?
So by the time he got to handgun number 17, he was raided by the ATF.
Really?
Because they saw this name.
It just kept coming up with
a person who had bought 17 handguns.
And meanwhile, it's just like Bobby Lee buying clothes.
Yes.
It's like, no,
it was like, why would you ever do that?
Because I'm a millionaire. Yes. I got nothing to do.
People were so bored with their lives.
Wow.
Jim was smart, but Jim once told me a story.
How much does handguns cost? Like $300? $500?
Yeah, like a lot of money. $1,000? He just kept buying them, yeah. Jim once, in high school, Jim took SATs for people to make money.
Oh.
And the joke was that he would take them for Asian guys because nobody could tell the difference. So one guy said, "Can you take the SATs for me?" And Jim goes, "Okay, sure." He goes, "Have you taken the SATs before? Because I got to know beforehand."
Yeah.
Yes, I've never taken the SATs. Jim gets a 1330 for the guy.
Yeah.
This set off every siren at the educational testing service because the guy had taken it before and got an 850.
Yeah.
So he had a 500-point
phenomenal
jump.
Leap up. Yeah.
A 500-point jump. So
I like how kids, by the way, are like, well, I could have guessed right one time. And you're like, you don't understand statistics.
The
no, you couldn't.
The principal called Jim in to scream at him. And Jim said, Jim, I know you took the test for this guy. I know you did. Jim just took the guy's ID, but yeah. He can't tell. Jim said, no, I didn't. And they never got him in trouble because Jim knew damn well they couldn't tell Asian apart.
They couldn't prove it.
Couldn't tell Asian person apart.
That's some Jim's teacher's not going to be like, that was definitely him, not him.
Yeah, couldn't prove it.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jim was the biggest fuck up, and he managed. So he was sort of like staying afloat.
Remember when I got Ray Cheng to take my typing test for me?
Yes, a legendary story.
I got remember where we left off, but yeah, I had to take a typing test to get into journalism school.
What I like about this story was that you were still doing challenges to yourself in college.
Yeah, I did challenges to myself. I remember my first year in college at YU, they gave us our grades, like in you had to line up and get them.
Yeah,
A through M and N through Z. Yeah. I was saying which one came first, but and they just give you an envelope with your grades. And I want to see if I could keep them in my pocket for a week in my breast pocket without checking them.
Yeah.
The grades are like, I want to see what I got.
But this was some weird ass.
Yeah, there's another
thing.
One. And so one, I was trying to not lie for a week, but earlier, like way earlier, like months earlier, I was taking this, you have to take, to get into journals, you have to take a typing test. You have to be at 25 words a minute. So I just gotten back from Israel and Yeshiva University where we didn't really have to type anything. So my skills had left. I took a typing class in high school.
Atrophied is the word.
Atrophied, yeah.
Atrophied.
Yeah, exactly. So I was at like 22. I took the test three times. I got 22, 21, 23. It was right there. I knew once I got back into college, like once I got into typing stuff, I'd be fine. So yeah. In my head, I was just reasoning with myself, like I will be at 25 before I start journalism.
Yeah.
Anyway, couldn't do it. So I just got right. All they wanted was you just sit at a computer and just type in your social security number and then you take the test.
Yeah.
So my roommate, Ray Chang, I got him. I was like, hey, take this test for me. I can't get 25 words a minute. And he went and took it and got 60 words a minute.
Yes. Set off some.
Yeah, set up some alarms. So when I went to register for journalism, there was a block. And I was like, what the fuck? So I had to go. And this was during the week that I was not lying.
Yes.
Just to see if I could do it. When people like, yeah, I thought if people would say, well, do I look good in this dress? Which that never happened. I would have to tell them, like, no, you don't. Yeah. Or whatever. Just be honest. It's hard to see if you can do a week without lying. It's really hard. People lie all the time. Yeah. Even nice people, Christians and stuff, they still lie.
Especially nice people.
Yeah, like you don't want to be hurtful. Yeah. You say I was stuck in traffic. No, you weren't.
A week without lying would make you a prick. And every asshole you've ever known, their rationalization is, I'm just honest.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. So they're like, hey, how come you got – she was like, oh, I don't know. There's a block. And she was looking, some secretary, and she was looking through it. She goes, I don't know. Oh, you got like 22 and 21 words a minute. Then you got 60? She goes, why was that? I was like, I had someone take the test for me. And she was like – barely paying attention. She was like, wait, what? And I was like, yeah, I couldn't pass it myself. So I took.
I learned this in real life, in the job world. It's one thing to fuck up, but honesty is disrespect.
Yeah. So the dean of the journalism school took me aside and said, we don't want to have this kind of person with this kind of ethics in our department. You'll never be in journalism.
Yep.
And I was like, what do you mean? Ethics in journalism? I can't lie to get a story? Like, what are you talking about? And he was like, no. And I was like, the point you're proving is going to be wasted on a student you're not even going to take.
Yeah.
but I just majored in English. That was it.
This is how journalism has withered as a field.
Yeah.
It's a dead field for that sort of.
It ain't about typing skills, asshole face.
The irony is once typing skills became important, you know what else became important? Right. The internet, which destroyed journalism.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
So Yeah, Jim Wang had done this. He had, but he actually just skated by lying. But anyway, they thought he was the biggest fuck up they could get. But I took it to another level of fucking up.
Yeah.
Now, what was happening over time was eventually people started getting fired, which took a lot. But Tableman got fired.
How did Tableman get fired? Insubordination.
Insubordination. They made company core values plaques.
And what does that mean?
They would print. They decided there were core values of Epiphany. And they printed these core values.
I love they've decided what the core values are, and not everybody agrees with them. How democracy gets, like, there's fights over it.
Tableman called it the laziest bilge that was pumped up from KPMG, the consulting firm where our CEO had come from.
Uh-huh.
The CEO decided core values on Lucite plaques, and Adam dumped them in the trash. That was the straw that broke the camel's back. Now, the problem also was that
Adam dumped those plaques in the trash.
Yeah, now the CEO had called Adam previously the most efficient corporate terrorist I'd ever encountered. Mm-hmm. So that was probably a problem. Here, the fundamental problem was this. We had half the people in the department or in our company were from Carnegie Mellon,
yeah.
And half the people were from Stanford. Now, Stanford was just a joy.
It was two cliques.
Well, not cliques. Everybody got along.
Okay.
Two mindsets. Stanford was like heaven on earth. Beautiful weather.
Compared to
Pittsburgh, West Coast, girls were there.
NorCal.
Super nice.
Right near Berkeley.
Beautiful campus near Berkeley. Everybody walked out happy. You'd see people from Stanford. They were happy. They'd spent 4 years happy. And, you know, they had to go to work. Hey, man, that's work. It's fine. College was good. Carnegie Mellon was like hell, like cold hell. The first winter I was there was negative 20 degrees.
Ugh.
It was there were no women because you didn't know any. The only women were in theater. You didn't meet a goddamn one of them.
Right.
It was 4 years of punishment. And when you got out of that, you thought, well, fucking life has to be better than this. I got to go do something. So all of the people from Carnegie Mellon were fired in really elaborate and angry ways. We had one guy who was fired. One guy from Carnegie Mellon was fired because he had his dog take a shit in front of the CEO's cubicle. Then he told the CEO's secretary.
Why does the CEO have a cubicle?
Because it was this bullshit where they pretended they were a man of the people, but they didn't use it. You know, that was in the world of software.
Oh, he was just never in his cubicle.
They paid a lot of lip service to being one of the group. Like, but it was
all
they bullshit.
Have those things where they get you like video games and stuff and ping pong tables.
Yeah,
people bring their dogs to work. That was always the thing.
The great thing about it was food. There was we would just eat and eat. I remember when I knew I was going
to charge it to the company.
Oh, yeah. So you would show up. I'd sleep until like 11, but make sure I stayed till the free food. And there was
What time did the free food get there? Like 7?
7, 6 or 7.
If you worked late, free food's coming.
Free food. Okay. So I remember one day when it was towards the end where I just kept eating and I was starting to vomit, but I said, I'm going to have to keep eating because I want to make sure I get more of this free food.
Did a lot of people just eat the free food and then check out right after that?
Of course, that's
like, leave as soon as the free
food. But it was beyond that. My friend, there was so much free food that there was a fist-sized chunk of wasabi.
Yeah.
And my friend said, how much will you guys pay if I eat this?
Yeah.
So we got a pool together. It was like $100. And he figured out if I take this wasabi, you know, the green.
Yeah.
He realized if I just roll it up and put it in the back of my throat, I won't taste it. So he did it. Swallowed piece by piece. And he shivered each time. His face shivered.
Really? Because it hurt him?
He got every single bit of that fist-sized chunk of wasabi.
Wow.
Three in the morning, he woke up. Walked to the bathroom and vomited all of it out.
Because you shouldn't have that. it ain't just about your tongue.
Boom.
Your tongue is stopping you from swallowing it because it's so dangerous to your body.
He vomited all of it out.
Uh-huh.
And so that was,
that must have been spicy coming up. That must have been a spicy barf. Water. More water.
The free food was so boring, we were doing challenges with it. So we, I can't remember the sort of – I feel like we were sidetracked here. So the point is it like all of the Carnegie Mellon people were fired in really elaborate ways. Like one guy had his dog take a shit in front of the CEO's cubicle. And also he told the CEO's secretary in an email he referred to the CEO as a, quote, fat pig.
Oh, that ain't going to get you fans. Really?
Later.
You can't do that in corporate life.
Nope.
God, but software, it was so different.
You could do it in software.
Because they're just like fucking nerds.
That was the joke of software was it wasn't corporate life because it was a world where all these young people.
This is like when they have a manager from like TGI Fridays come to Comedy Store and try to like shape things up.
Uh-huh.
You're like, you ain't shaping things up here.
Software was like the Comedy Store of
you have these animals.
World. Animals, but you need
and they're
them
rich
because they were rich and they were talented and they were objectively brilliant and they got stuff done.
Yeah,
but they were always fired in these elaborate ways. When Tableman got fired, he pointed out to the people who were firing that, you know, I installed a MP3 server on our CEO's home computer that was thousands of years of $1,000, many years of violations, and the RIA would probably want to know about this because this was about a half a year of music he put on the CEOs.
Really?
There were lawyers coming in to discuss how are we going to handle the problem of firing him.
Oh, wow.
That was how he got fired because, again, Carnegie Mellon people got fired in really elaborate ways.
How did he get fired?
Well, he got fired, but the point is they
the lawyers had all talk, like, is this worth it? Get this stuff off your computer right now.
But the point is this. Carnegie Mellon people were always fired, and they always were fired in these really elaborate –
Stanford people was like, well, thanks for the opportunity.
They didn't get fired. They were like, gee, this is great. We had one CEO employee who was fired, and when he was fired, he was throwing his chair around the cubicle. He was throwing his chair – like. The point is this.
The CEO that got fired?
No, the CMU people. Carnegie Mellon people were fired. So the point is this. Tim eventually fired. It just got a little less fun, and I was managing to sort of slowly stay afloat, but I could feel it was coming to an end.
Yeah, after Tableman's gone.
Tableman's
gone. That's your protector too, right?
He was a protector. Ron was a protector. It was just slowly.
And you're like, fuck. You're like, I ain't going anywhere.
I'm not quitting.
Yeah. Because you have $1 million coming to you if you make it through the year.
I can make it through the year.
And who knows?
A quarter of a million, and then also, yeah, who knows how long it lasts. Because again, Jim Wang had been fired, and Jim was the biggest fuck up.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, maybe I can last. And stuff's starting to happen. I'm starting to figure out. I get transferred to another boss, and I know something's up. And one day he calls me and he says, David, we need to have a talk.
Yeah.
And in my experience, when somebody needs to have a talk, they're going to fire you.
Yeah.
That has been the phrase that's been used.
Because what else would it be?
No. That's pretty much it. I thought maybe it was going to be a pep talk.
Yeah.
But I knew, I said, David, you're okay unless you see the head of human resources show up. See the head of HR, Steve Hams, we call him the Angel of Death. He looked like a 70s porn star. If the Angel of Death shows up, you know this is the end of your tenure at Epiphany.
My high school basketball coach, or maybe it was middle school. It was middle school.
Yeah.
And he was like, I was the fifth guy on the team.
Yeah.
We probably had eight people that played. And he was like, all right, can I talk to you before a big game against Jewish Day School,
yeah,
who I later transferred to? And I was like, sure. And we took a walk around, and I was like, do you want me to shoot more? And he's like, oh, no, we're going to start Boaz this game because his parents are here, and I hope you don't think it's about anything else. His parents are here, so we're going to start in this game. And I was like, oh, crushed. Oh.
Well, I was a grown-up, so I wasn't.
Yeah. So like, I wasn't five.
I'm walking down the hall with Emil.
Yeah.
Who would give me a chance. He pulled me and goes, I'll get you to work. And at
what
this
is
point,
Emil? Indian?
No, Emil's Russian. He was my boss, and he was a really nice guy, but, you know.
It was Emil in The Simpsons. He was a spy. He was a spy kid.
A Russian. Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
He was like Albanian. That's
understand
what
that I had not just been, Ari, and I just done nothing. I had also spent my time doing nothing reading SPR.org, which was a website devoted to stories
I
and poetry.
I push that everywhere I go.
About prison rape. Yes.
SPR.org. If you haven't gone there, it's SPR.org.
Ron Yang, I don't know if they might have gotten rid of it. Ron
no
Yang
way.
Discovered it. They changed it when they discovered that maybe we shouldn't have explicit poetry and stories about prison rape.
Yeah. But it was hard. You had to eventually look for that story number seven.
Yes, the seventh rapist.
Yeah.
So Ron Yang discovered SPR.org and also meetafemaleinmate.com.
Oh.
Yeah.
SPR.org.
Trust me.
Meetafemaleinmate.com.
It was awesome.
I love those early days of websites because no one knew how to
Ron take Yang it. Found all this stuff,
Duncan
too.
Found one. God's Little Ones. Remember that?
What was that?
It was. Let's enter that first, and then we'll go to SPR.org. It was a site that if you have a miscarriage or an abortion and later feel sorry about it.
You could have a memorial page for it?
No. That would be great. They would recreate a little thing, either by picture or by an actual three-dimensional object, how big the baby would have been when you aborted it or miscarried
it. Oh, nice. I like
that. Try to match your hair color.
No, in other words, what it looked like. So if you're feeling guilty, here's a way to feel really guilty.
Yeah, and there was a picture on there of this guy, this girl. Godslittleones.com. Yes, I did mean that. There was a picture of a guy. Yep, hold the baby in the palm of your hand. Look how
would
creepy
it make
that
a doll?
Yeah,
oh,
make
that's
a doll
incredible
that you could fit in your hand.
I thought this was just a computer animation.
No, and Duncan tried to get one of my things on there once.
Yeah,
and I got all these emails saying, "Listen,
your offspring?
My story?
Yeah, okay,
my story. He just made up a story.
Yeah.
And they said, well, you're getting a lot of complaints about your, or it was something ridiculous.
Yeah.
About how I used to be a crack whore or whatever, and like I want. And they said, I know that you don't mean anything wrong by this, but people are upset by it, so we're going to have to take it down.
Oh, that is disgusting.
But there was a picture. I wish I could find it. Portrait dolls. Ugh. There's a picture of this woman who just had a miscarriage,
mm-hmm.
Clearly still in shock.
Yeah.
And was posing with this miscarried baby, this stillborn baby. It was a stillborn.
That is awesome.
Yeah. At Artist Mission, pro-life Bible verses, comfort scriptures. Ugh.
Yeah, well, I never have seen this before. This would have killed at least.
You got to look for the
days of
God's
work.
Little ones. You got to look for that picture. And this guy who knows his wife's in shock, so he's posing in the picture too. But he's like, "What's my responsibility here?
Yeah,
it's a bad thing. I don't want to tell like, sweetheart, like, that's wise up.
Couples always break up when their baby dies because they always grieve and
different. That's my first abortion. It was like, hey, we're not strong enough to make it through this relationship.
My first abortion would be a great name for a doll.
My first abortion. here, SPR.org.
SPR, it's incredible. They changed it up. It used to be a lot more. Now it's a lot more human rights based.
Yeah.
But at that point, they didn't know what they were doing, so it was, of course, a lot more entertaining. So SPR.org. Also, Meet a Female Inmate, by the way, which is offline now. That was when female inmates would post information about themselves, but they would always not have pictures, so they'd put up pictures from like a JCPenney catalog.
Yeah.
So you'd see that like they had nothing to do with them.
Oh,
it was
really?
Just random pictures. So you could send emails or you know letters to them. Anyway, SPR.org. I was going to lunch with Adam and Ron and Eric Chang and Manira, this point
she'd already hated you or
hated
not?
Hated me with a huge intensity.
Kind people hate you a lot.
She realized she had been cheated by my interview. She figured out that I had swindled her.
Oh, so she was super pissed.
She had gone to bat for me and said, "He's done the best job I've ever seen of anybody solving it." And then it turns out this was a con game. She was enraged. And then, meanwhile, I'm telling elaborate graphic stories about prison rape. And at that point, what my friend saw was she was shivering with anger and disgust and loathing about me.
Really?
Yes. That was towards the end.
These are portraits of... Yeah, go ahead.
That was towards the end when I was telling about the guy who had gotten raped in prison and then realized that he liked it because he gave him power. So he got arrested again so he could go back. Then,
he got arrested.
Or the guy who was raped 65 times in a single 2-day period because the warden thought he was there to do an expose. That guy.
He thought he was there to do an expose?
On prison.
So the warden said, fuck it, I'm going to let you get raped.
You know what? You want to get raped? You get raped. Then he sent him in. He was raped so much, he said he started to hallucinate that God was a big black cock. He eventually got out because he was vomiting on a prisoner's semen and was able to crawl out. They had to sew his asshole back together. That was a story that made her shiver. So anyway, the point
is okay, I just random clicked on one. It said Bryson, formerly Kendall, 1963-2010, was raped by more than 25 other inmates over the course of 9 months during his incarceration at Arkansas State Prison.
You know what that sounds like to me?
What?
This is where SPR used to be a lot more
about... Shouldn't like that?
No, SPR used to be a lot more about functional advice.
Oh, yeah.
They would have told Bryson in the early days, you don't want to get raped by 25 inmates, find a protector. You got to become a punk.
Really?
And then you only get raped by one.
I remember that one guy was taught... One of his things was, I got out, and I remember trying to share this with my wife. I got married.
Oh.
Shared it with my wife that I'd been raped in prison, and she leaned over and goes, I ain't married to no punk.
That was an even worse story, because the way he shared that was, she told a story. She broke down and said, you'll never understand, but my uncle raped me. And he said, I do understand. I was raped in prison, and then she turned and said, I married a punk, and
yeah, she knew the prison term for...
Yeah.
Which she probably didn't say that. That's probably what it's...
Maybe he just thought that.
Okay. He contracted HIV as a result of the attacks.
Not surprised. He was the bottom, yeah.
How, you're just in jail for fucking stealing something?
Well...
Somebody rapes you to HIV?
Yep.
Although they repeatedly reported attacks, prison officials failed to protect Mr. Martel.
They failed to provide Mr. Martel a safe housing environment. He weighed only 123 pounds. You know what I can tell you right now? He was they throw the weak ones in with the rapist. Probably he was involved in some sort of weird sex crime, or they thought he was gay, and they just threw him in.
Yeah, the one I remember was an article. It was a poem about the number seven.
The seventh rapist, because the first six had taken their rod and taken his body, but he actually...
The seventh from behind him whispered and said, I'm sorry, this will all be over soon.
Yeah.
And that's when I fell in love.
It shows you... It's interesting. Like, the prison showed... It was very interesting because there were several points to be made about humanity. For example, that one about how any kindness is interpreted, it sort of recenter. Also, what I found interesting was one guy who was a prison punk said that the way somebody would get moved to his cell with his protector, the guy who's raping him, the protector would piss in his mouth. And the new person would look and say, oh my God, this guy is so extreme. He has this punk so trained. I'm not going to fuck with either one of them. So the punk actually gained power by being subjugated.
Oh.
So that was how...
Yes. So he wouldn't get raped so much.
He wouldn't rape by somebody else because the guy thought, well, this guy's handling his business. Anyway, these are stories I was telling. at a corporate,
in jokey,
in a corporate environment.
He got raped so many times.
To a woman.
Oh, yeah.
Who was shivering with rage. This did not help my standing in the office. So we get to the point where they're saying, David, we need to pull you, you know, we want to have a talk with you. And I think, you know what, I'm walking down the hallway, I'm like, I'm fine as long as I don't see Steve Hams. And then almost as if out of the wall, Steve Hams appeared. And I said, David.
Which one's Steve Hams?
The Angel of Death, the HR guy who only showed up when you were fired because he wanted to make sure they were saying the right thing. HR in any company is always the worst of the worst, the least competent, the where they put just the absolute worst, the fat people. So they throw them all in HR, and Steve Hams was the head. So Steve showed up, and I knew, David, this is your last day at Epiphany. And I thought, well, it was a good run.
Yeah.
And you didn't take any sick days. You did pretty well for yourself.
Oh, you get paid for those sick days.
Oh, you pay for 6 days. Yeah. It was beyond that, though. Because I knew I was going to get the stock, but I didn't care. I just wanted out. I didn't care about the money. Which
really?
Because this is a crazy thing. Everybody at that company just assumed, oh, you get out of work, you get out of college, you go to work, and you become super rich.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know anything else. And all the people who had been hit by a comet thought, you know what? This happened to me because I'm brilliant. They all thought it was true. So anytime you see a story
about...
What
do you mean, the people that had been hit by a comet?
It was as unlikely as possible.
Oh, right.
Anytime you see a story about a young actor who acts like an asshole and gets fired from a show, or a basketball player...
It's because they don't think... They're like, I deserve this.
They think they deserve this because they don't know anything else. And I understand...
Yeah, I was wondering, like, how long did you...
That's not about them being smart or stupid, because these were some really smart people, but they just assumed, you know what? This is the way it is.
Can't be, I'm untouchable. This not is the just, way this is the way life is going to be from
this
now
This is
on.
The way life is.
Yeah.
So I said, you know what, David? I don't care about the money. It's fine. I just want out. You did a good run here.
Yeah.
So they pull me in a room, and they're gritting their teeth, and they tell me, David, you did nothing in your 6 months here. We fired you for a reason. We kept presenting things for you to do, to learn. You did nothing. And they enumerated all the ways that I had betrayed them. And they went through. They were
you didn't do anything. You didn't earn a dollar.
We're
that we
firing
paid
you with for a cause. We're not firing you for any other reason other than you were utterly incompetent at your job. And I sat there and I thought, this is fair. I'm not going to argue with this.
Yeah.
Then they get to the end and they say, but. And I'm thinking, well, this is going to be good.
Interesting. Yeah.
At that point, Epiphany had bought a company called Octane. Octane was purchased for $3 billion for a software product that was a can of shit.
Really?
It was utterly useless. Later, years later, when I was working at the Comedy Store, I was wearing my Epiphany shirt, and three guys came up, and they said, oh, Epiphany.
Audience members?
Audience members. I'm selling them a ticket. And they go, oh, Epiphany, we worked at Octane. And I looked at them, and I said, oh, as I handed the ticket, that was a real can of shit.
Uh-huh.
And then they looked at me, what? And I turned away, and they just walked in, because it was terrible.
What was Octane?
Some bullshit software product that they decided to buy because they thought it was going to be worthwhile, and they just spent $3 billion. It was a waste of fucking
money. Remember the Toys.com building? Did you ever go to Editions when they had it on Bundy?
Oh, yeah, I do remember that, actually.
Kitty
yeah.
corner to that.
I do remember
that place.
Toys,
there was a giant building and it had for Toys.com.
Yes.
And it wasn't Pets.com. No, it was Toys.com.
Yeah.
And they put a giant Toys.com sign on the outside, redid the entire inside of the building,
and
never added a chair or desk because they went out of money.
Burn money. Burn rate.
Yeah.
So they spent all this money on Octane. So but the lawyers tell us, and they could, and you never heard more disdain from the phrase, the lawyers tell us, that no matter the reason, if we fire someone during a period of restructuring, as we are restructuring because we just bought Octane, we have to give them severance.
Oh.
So they said, we are giving you
severance.
2 months of severance pay.
Yeah.
They said it with gritting the teeth. So I got a load of dough. I said, wait, I get extra money in addition to my vacation time? They said, yes. So I'm pumping my fist and going, ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching.
You're saying that?
Yes. As they're looking at me like, what?
We hate you. We've already fired
the
you.
The fuck? And that was... I thought, you know what?
They didn't want that response from you.
No. They were like, what the fuck is this guy's problem? Because they looked at me like they couldn't understand it. And all the time,
winners don't understand how losers like being
losers.
It's
not just that. In all the time working in software, it's any cult you belong to, you don't understand how anyone could not belong. You know how that works?
Same with acting classes.
Same with marriage.
Yeah.
Married people look at single people and don't understand how you could
you
ever
must be
single.
Wasting your life.
Yes. And in the same way, religious people.
I had a talk with my married friends. I'm like, okay, I get it. I get you think my life is empty. I get that. But can't you give it up a little bit? Can't you say there is some value in the fact that I had sex with a 22-year-old hot girl yesterday and you got denied sex from your 36-year-old mother of three wife? Yeah. Can't you see how it's a that just one moment might be cool?
There are trade-offs, absolutely.
But they always want to believe, no part of your life is worth it.
Because, and that's the same with software, it's the same with any job. That people, when I was in Pittsburgh, I used to tell people, I don't want to do this forever. I want to just go do, I don't know, entertainment. And they looked at me like I had a horn growing on my head. Like, who would ever do that?
Who would want to be a comedian?
Like, but not just that, but like, who does that? It's not possible.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, it's silly. So, but anyway, they would look at me. So they're looking at me as I'm going, ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. And they're like, looking at me like, what the fuck? And I realized this is the end of the road for me. So I got all my stuff, and Ron Yang and I went to a McDonald's. We sat at McDonald's, and we were talking about, well, what are you going to do? And Ron said,
it's actually a place for power meetings.
We're sitting at McDonald's, and I'm thrilled. I'm so thrilled. I felt like the gay guy who's come out of the closet.
Why? Because you were just like, I'm afraid.
I never have to work in software again.
Why? Was that annoying to you? You didn't do anything.
Because it wasn't me, and because I've sat there all day, every day, thinking, you were just a fuck-up. You were just...
So you just felt bad, and it wasn't worth the money?
I felt bad because you feel like, you know what? This isn't what I want to do, and it's not what I want. So you just... It started away on you.
Yeah, after you have enough people telling you you're a shithead enough time, you're like, this is not pleasant.
Because you know what? It wasn't what I was good at.
Yeah.
When I saw Ron and Adam, those guys, when they sit in front of a computer, it looked like...
They belong
this is
there.
What they were made to do.
Yeah.
When I sat in front of a computer, I was just going to SPR.org.
Yeah.
So over time, even though you were getting paid a lot of money and the job couldn't have been easier.
It wore on you.
It wore on me.
And also because you get complacent about the money. You're like, this is what I deserve. I've been making this.
Well, yeah, I knew the money was good, but I knew, you know what? It just isn't worth it. And it just kept weighing on me. So by the end, it was like a huge weight was lifted off me. And Ron said, you know, David, why don't you just get another job in San Francisco? Nobody will really know you're incompetent. You could get, at that point, I could keep getting job after job after job. Nobody would ever have to know. I could keep working. And I looked at him. I said, Ron, I think I'm going to move to Los Angeles. And he said, oh. He did not believe me.
Yeah.
He thought, there's just no way. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
And I knew in my heart, I go, I'm just gone. I'm never coming back here, and I'm not going to ever be a part of this again.
Really?
And I felt so happy. That is how I lost $1 million and felt incredible about it. Not once did I think, gosh, gee, I wish I'd... I just felt fine.
You're like,
I couldn't have lasted those 6 months. I'd tell you right now.
If you just put in like a menial level of effort.
If I had done just a little effort.
Yeah, you could have lasted till 2 years.
Easily. I could have lasted indefinitely. Remember Jim, the biggest fuck up in the world?
Which one's Jim?
The guy who told me I'm the biggest fuck up in town.
Uh-huh. He lasted.
He lasted for 5 or 6 years. He got every penny of his stock.
Wow.
Because you just had to do just a little and not be aggressive about fucking up. And you'd be fine. And I did.
It's weird when you're young, you feel like you have to fight against things.
That said,
yeah.
Do I still feel like I made the right decision?
Yeah, do you?
Yeah.
You
did. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I know I lost a lot of money.
Could you, looking back at this, could you have done this? Kept a job and started comedy in San Francisco?
No, I could not have done that. I absolutely could not have done that for several reasons. One is I knew to do comedy, I needed to get away from my friends. I didn't want them to see me.
Okay, so even if you got another job.
Two is I knew that to do comedy, you need to have a job that you're not thinking about all the time, because that's the fucked up thing about these jobs. Even when you're doing nothing.
Yeah.
Even when you're fucking up. When you go home from work, you're still thinking about it.
You're exhausted, yeah.
You can't not think about it. It's always in your head. It's a real
job. That's what everybody talks about. Comedians only talk about comedy all the time. And other, I remember waitresses, when they were off, we'd all go out to eat and stuff. They'd be like, can you believe this guy tipped me 10%?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had one. They tipped me 8%.
Yes.
And he's like, guys, leave your shitty job behind you. Let's just drink.
That's why the best job I ever had was working at the Comedy Store in phones, because I could do it while sleeping.
Uh-huh.
And the watch second I walked away, Seventh Heaven, watched a lot of that.
Yeah.
Ever tell you a story about Jessica Biel?
What's the story about her?
Okay, so
you met her?
At that point, I'm watching Seventh Heaven all the
time. Okay, David has a capacity for making people upset.
Unhappy.
Unhappy. Yes. We had a thing once, or should we say this before or afterwards?
I angered a porn star who called me horribly offensive recently.
Who
pretty
was
excited
that?
About that. Don't want to say who it is.
Okay, that's fair.
But it was a porn actress who called me offensive with my wordplay.
Uh-huh.
Yes, my capacity to anger.
Yeah.
At this point, I'm talking about Jessica Biel.
I probably heard it, but keep talking. I'm going to pee, but keep talking.
I'm watching a lot of Jessica Biel at this time. And I watch a lot of Seventh Heaven. And at that point, I am walking down the street towards the Comedy Store. And I see, this is a little absurd. This feels like I'm doing a set.
Is it because I'm not there?
Yes. Pause it. I have to use the bathroom too. Yes.
Okay, Jessica Biel.
So at this point, I'm at the Comedy Store, which is, again, the greatest job in the world, and I am...
It is a fun job.
It's the best job I've ever had.
You make friends. Really, nobody has any money.
Everybody's poor.
It's part-time work for $6.50 an hour.
People show up. They hang out. It's just great. And also, you could, again, do the job. I worked the phones in the morning, and I would do them while asleep, to the point where it's at home, I started answering the phone. World-famous comedy store, David speaking.
Yeah, I did that sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah. I did that in college, North Hill Service Desk, and I'd answer it at home. Like, North Hill Service, I mean,
just
hello.
Go with it. So I was watching a lot of Seventh
Heaven. Yeah, I used to – you watch – I would take the phone and put it on the floor.
Yeah.
And pull up some stuff or get a couch cushion from the green room and use it as a pillow. And sleep with the phone right next to my head. So if someone called before 11,
oh, yeah.
We had to be there at 9, but nobody came in until 11. So if somebody called, I could answer the phone, but no one did.
I learned how to sleep sitting up on Spanish trains, so I was able to use that skill. I was pretty happy with that. So the at that point, I'm watching all of Seventh Heaven. And Jessica Biel, of course, beautiful actress.
Big fact about her in Seventh Heaven.
She was actually younger than the sister that she played older than.
She was the older sister on the show and the younger sister by a couple of years.
Beverly Mitchell.
Both ways, yeah.
So anyway, one day I'm walking down the street towards the Comedy Store and I look at, a few feet ahead of me is Jessica Biel with a friend. And I'm like, holy shit, that's Jessica Biel. And I think, well, what do I do here? So I bellow out to my friend who is 5 feet away from me at the Comedy Store. Hey, Skippy. Is that television's Jessica Biel from Seventh Heaven?
Just to
as loud as could be. Now, at this point, Jessica was trying to make a career for herself as a movie actress, and it was actually considered the worst. Jessica didn't want to be considered just the girl from Seventh Heaven anymore.
Yeah.
So she was a little upset with that, especially when I started screaming to Skippy, yes, it is Jessica Biel from television Seventh Heaven. I'm a huge fan. Now, Skippy, to his credit, instantly realized what I was doing and said, oh, my God, you, Jessica Biel from television Seventh Heaven, and then started elaborately describing the ways he had beaten off to her and the ways he had cleaned the screen, the various techniques he had used to clean the screen.
The screen, like he jerked off onto the
TV. Yes, on the TV, and that he had to buy multiple Windex to fix this problem. So at this point, we're screaming this back and forth. Two people that are about 5 feet away from each other, while she is in front of us, she looks, she goes, hey, fuck you guys. Fuck you. She turns and flips us off and go, oh my God, is that television Jessica Biel telling us to fuck ourselves? So at that point, she's screaming, or fuck you. And her friend pulls her shoulder and then she realizes, what am I doing? Why am I acknowledging these geeks?
These idiots, these losers.
What is wrong with me? So she turns and you could just see the turn. We knew we had ruined her day.
Yeah, you get
it. She turned and raged, walks away in a huff, and we're laughing, and Skippy looks at me and goes, who's Jessica Biel?
I had no idea.
Yeah, no.
You just did some actress from TV.
Just some actress, just went with it. That to me sums up working the phones at the Comedy Store better than anything else, because those are the people you work with. People that are willing.
Yeah.
People used to look at me in software, by and large, and think I was a little bit troubled when I do shit like that. But when you come to the Comedy Store.
Simone said it once, Island of Misfit Toys.
Yeah. Now, there were still some crazy people in software, but even then, those were few and far between.
No, they weren't like hoisted on someone's shoulders, figuratively.
Yeah. We were standing
craziness.
On the shoulders of fucking up.
The time we tried to make somebody cry, we were just like, let's make somebody cry.
Oh, yes. Ari and I, we sat in front of the Comedy Store and decided, let's start annoying people. So girls were coming by, and we were having a hard time getting them to talk, and then one of us figured out the brainstorm. What was it?
I'm gay. We're gay. Don't worry about it.
And that was when one girl turned and looked at us and said, okay, great, great. And then
we were like, hey, can I talk to you for a second? We were just yelling at people, and people were like, oh, whatever, and they walk on.
No, it's cool. It's cool. We're gay.
We're gay. We just want to talk. And then it became like disarming, like, oh, all right, they're not trying to hit on me.
Not trying to fuck
us.
Is
1:45 a.m., so bars are closed or about to close.
So one girl's walking back and she...
No. Hold on. Back up.
Oh, yeah.
We went to Pink Dot 2. Here's the thing. We're like, let's pick on people. And then every time a group of like black women would go by, I'd be like, hey.
No.
Nope. Don't say a word.
No. They'll beat our ass.
Yeah. All we would do is if there's a group of black people with one white woman, we'd make fun of the white girl and try to get the black girl to laugh at the white girl.
That was pretty good, too. Yes.
And then we saw a Katana. Some lady was getting off work. And we're like, hey, what's your name? And then you could just see, she's like, oh, Margaret, I just got off work. And we're both like,
too nice.
Nah, no. Yeah, you seem nice. Yep. You seem like you don't deserve any of what we're going to give you.
You know, in a way, that's kind of like, you ever hear about the Hillside Stranglers? You know, there was a murder team in the 70s called the Hillside Stranglers.
Yeah.
They would pull people, they pretend to be cops, pull them over, and then kill them. They'd take the car and kill them.
Yeah.
They pulled one girl over, and it was Catherine Lorre, daughter of Peter Lorre, who played a serial killer in the movie M. Mm-hmm. He's also in Casablanca. Remember Ugarte? He's like, you loathe me, Peter.
Yeah.
You loathe me, Rick. He's like a creepy dude. Anyway, the point is they pull her over. They realize she's his daughter. And they go, you know what? You get a pass.
Of murder.
Yep.
Wow.
Months later, she saw them on they arrested. Like, she was, yep, that was.
Wow. She got, I didn't get off a ticket. I got off a murder.
Yep.
My own murder.
So in our way, it's a low, low level version of the Hillside Strangler. Yeah. But we had that one girl who was eventually. We got out of her that she was.
She was. I had a boyfriend,
a musician.
Musician, and we were like, we. And you would also. So you still do this. You just. You like. You'll throw out a guess of something like, oh, your father didn't.
I learned that from the Pentium processor.
People are like, no, my father was always with me. And you're like, okay, move on.
The Pentium processor would guess ahead, and then if it was correct, keep it, and if not, throw it away.
Yeah. And so you just throw words out, and if they sort of say, like, yeah, that happened a little bit, and you keep pushing that ankle until you find someone's buttons.
Yes.
And her button was this. We're like, oh, my boyfriend's a musician.
And he was on the road, but was in town.
Hold on, before we even said that. We were like, oh, he's probably cheating on you.
No doubt. He's definitely cheating on you.
Yeah.
She said, no, he's not. And that's when we knew we had a fish. Because if she wouldn't agree, you know, it's like you need
there's
something to
you
fight
know
against.
Is not cheating you. On you. You're like, nah, he's not. But that's okay.
He needed her to fight against you. So yeah. No, he's not.
No, he's not.
Well.
Angry.
Then we learned.
Tell us a story about him.
Yeah. He had been on the road. He had just come back that night and hadn't slept with her.
Yeah, but like, wait. He was on the road. He went on the road. You're telling me a musician went on the road and didn't cheat on you? That's ridiculous.
That's not humanly possible.
And then
that's
we're like,
why the road exists.
When does he get back from the road? He's like, oh, he got back today. I'm like, and you're out alone? He's been on the road for 6 months not fucking anyone? And you haven't had sex yet since you've been back? And he hasn't had sex with anyone? We're like, that's because he's been fucking other people.
That was the point when she started to scream at us.
Yeah.
And she decided she was going to walk away. And this was your – you had a really brilliant idea and real innovation.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking
I forgot about this.
She screamed at us to make the point and just goes, you know what? Fuck you guys. Fuck you. It's not worth talking to you. Fuck you.
With her friend. Her friend was trying to drag her away for a little while.
Yes. Yeah, so she walks away saying, fuck you. And that's when you say – well, just run along then, whatever her name was.
Run along, little girl.
And then she had to turn around.
Walk away because she couldn't get the last word.
I've used that since.
Run along, little girl.
Now, that worked.
You used a great one recently when some girl came up to you and said something.
Oh, yes. There was a girl who came up to me and said something. And I can't remember. I just
like
want to talk to
her. Or you're an asshole or something like that.
She goes, well, you're an asshole. You know, I don't like talking to you. I said, well, you know, it's funny because you have to talk to me. She yeah. said, what do you mean? I said, you have to talk to me. No, I don't. You notice you're still talking to me.
You're like, well,
I don't have to talk to you. Are you talking to me?
Here you are, still talking to me.
It's, after a while, she eventually walked away
and
raged.
Got it, but you're like, yeah. You're not getting the last word.
Nope.
I'm going to leave with a victory here.
So this girl eventually.
This is what you used to do with backgammon, by the way. Yeah. There's only a few moves. It's they call it like 95% luck.
Yeah.
But the 5% skills, major gamblers make a lot of money off that, you know? But like, if you open up with a 6-5, there's one move to make. You take your guy from all the way trapped to all the way safe.
Yeah.
And so what we would do is. If you open up with a 6-5, I'd be like, I command you to move that guy there. I command you. And you'd be like, wait, let me see what else I want to do.
Yes.
You just don't want the other person to be right.
Absolutely. And
yeah.
This is why she I will give her this credit. She did come up with an innovation that did eventually stump us because she needed to have the last word,
yeah.
But we were going to keep doing that. So then she offered.
No. Before that, though? She started beating us.
She started punching us, but even then, that was fine. She was punching us. We were laughing.
With the handbag,
but we were laughing. That was fine.
She started wailing on us with the handbag. She was weak. She was a weak little girl.
We laughed and laughed and laughed.
And she broke her handbag.
Yes.
She broke
the strap.
Yeah.
She was screaming.
She was so mad at us for doing it. Like, what? We were taking your. You were striking us.
At that point, we thought we had won until she came up with the checkmate move, which was she started offering strangers money to kick our ass.
Yeah. A pretty damsel in distress.
That's when we ran to the back and hid.
We're like, yeah, right.
Yeah. And that's the end of our interaction.
What's this coming out? My true feathers?
Yeah, that's
true. Is it True Colors? Real Feathers?
True Colors is the Four Feathers. Was the movie with Heath Ledger where he played the coward?
Oh, really?
Yes. Or maybe
what is it? Peacock shows its feathers. There's a saying with feathers, but like you show your feathers. Maybe the peacock shows its true colors.
I can't remember what it is.
Me neither.
You know what? You get close enough, you're fine.
Yeah.
So yeah, Jessica Biel. We've had a lot of entertainment in front of that front patio at the store. But
well, the best was when somebody crashed their car there.
That's happened multiple. Like, we've seen two police chases start. We've seen that car that hit the pole.
When they hit the pole, you got to get out and exchange insurance information do whatever. And you're like, fuck, I just got into an accident. You're like, well, that'll be the worst of it.
And then people are taunting you.
Really witty people.
Yeah.
Really witty people are taunting you.
Worst place to get pulled over, too.
The cops realize we're all just for fun, so they're like, nah, allow it.
They're fine with that. They don't care. Although, the flip side of that is when the cops see an alarm from the comedy store, they take their sweet ass time.
They take their sweet ass time, yeah.
There's a button in that booth that says please come cops, and they hear that as you know, I could stay a little while.
You know, they installed that button and no one told me because I think I was still in the booth at the time.
You just randomly tapping it?
Yeah. They said, go down and turn the lights on. So I went and turned the lights on and I was going to go back up to the phones. But then I went in there and I saw that button. And I was like, what does this button do? And I was looking around where it could be connected to. And I hit it. And there's like no light went on. And I'm a solver, man. I need to solve what these things are. Even if it doesn't do me any good. So I'm hitting it again. I'm turning off the main lights. And I'm like looking out, looking at all the lights in there. I'm like, maybe it's the runner. So I go outside. And then I hit it like 10 times. I hold it down. What the fuck? And then all of a sudden, cops just surround the place. And they're like, what the fuck? Who are you? I'm like, I work here. Somebody sounded the alarm. I was like, oh, was that button? I hit it like 80 times. Yeah, that was me.
Did you ever hear Sergio Love's Andrew Cunanan story?
No. Who's Andrew Cunanan?
Andrew Cunanan was a serial killer who was going on the run and eventually killed Versace in Miami. But there was a while there where he was just killing people randomly across the country.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
he had a sweet ass, right?
Yeah, he's good looking.
Gay guys love fucking him.
Yeah, gay guys love fucking him. So before he was caught, you know, killing Versace.
Yeah.
RPM, everybody in the world was looking for him, and they thought he was going to end up in Los Angeles, specifically West Hollywood. It's a gay mecca. So the piano guy, Jordan, who's still there, looks kind of like a sea captain. You know Jordan. He says to somebody, he says to Sergio, he said, I think that guy in the audience there is Andrew Cunanan.
Yeah.
And Sergio said, that's not Andrew Cunanan.
While he's on the run?
Yeah, while he's on the run. He goes, that's not Andrew Cunanan. It's just not. And Jordan goes, I think it is. Because I think I'm going to, you know, check it. I'm going to call it in. He goes, that's not Andrew Cunanan. Well, Sergio forgets about it. Half an hour later, Sergio looks out and notices there are a lot of cars on Sunset. It's kind of weird. Usually it's pretty busy. It's Friday night.
There are a lot of cars?
No, there are
not a lot of cars.
Not a lot of cars. In fact, he realizes there's no cars. And he looks out and sees a police helicopter circling and realizes that
they blocked it off from Los Angeles.
The Los Angeles police have put a giant perimeter on the Comedy Store and they're bullhorning, asking Andrew Cunanan, please come out.
Really?
They thought.
Jordan, was it him? Jordan called it in.
Jordan called in and said, Andrew Cunanan is in our audience.
Wow.
And they sort of, that is part of the reason the cops take their sweet-ass time to get to the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
Because that's not the only time that's happened. That's happened repeatedly.
Wow.
So, yeah, anyway, the point is this. I loved my working at the Comedy Store. I hated the work at Epiphany. And I liked the people at Epiphany. They were nice people, but it just wasn't. If you're doing the job that you don't want to do for no good reason other than money, if people ask you, do you like your job, and you tell them how much money you make, that's a bad job and you should quit. When the first thing you say about your job is your money, that's just not worth your time. It just isn't.
If it's just about the money?
Yeah. If the first, when you say, hey, you like the job, they say, I'm making this money, it's just not
worth
it.
That means you don't, they don't like it.
Means you hate it beyond measure.
Yeah, that's what I noticed at some point. In comedy, a lot of people eventually like, hey, what are you doing? It's not about like, oh, I'm getting these bookings and stuff. It's like they talk about like, I'm writing this or I'm doing that or I'm working on a really cool thing.
Yeah.
But it's not about like sitcom money.
No.
That's
and the thing is, there's a difference. If you have a family, hey, man, you got to do that. You got to do it for your family. But if you're single and 24 and you're looking at yourself in the mirror thinking, I'm going bald.
Well, yeah, at some point it's like, I got to live my life.
Yeah.
It's like, how much money is worth your life? I mean, these are years of my life. If it's $10 million a year for 5 years and then you're out, sure, go for it.
Sure. That's exactly. But, and you know, there's a lot of money, but I said, you know what? I'm fuck this. And then I moved to Los Angeles and I never doubted it. And even living in abject poverty, it still was not worth it.
Were you a slob when you had money?
Absolutely. the joke was, it was beyond slovenly. Like people were, one girl, my friend brought a girl to our apartment and looked, she said, my room was so bad, it was a deal breaker for him.
Oh, really?
Because it was at that point, I couldn't afford I didn't pay for a bed. I just put a mattress on the floor and surrounded it with trash. Newspapers.
The least of the trash being you.
Yeah, yeah. I slept among, you know, my kind. And like extra value meals. I mean, I've had places and the toilet was disgusting.
Your toilet's all, whatever apartment you've ever gone to, it's like, oh, new apartment. And they're like, Dave, it's been a week. How are there brown stains in this?
The worst apartment I ever had was in Pittsburgh. It was so bad that people would enter the building. I was on the third floor and they would smell my apartment. And I would say, no, it's my neighbor. And then you get up and they realize, holy shit. There was
so bad. You can curse. It's fine.
I didn't have a disposal. And I had just 2 or 3 inches of black food matter in the sink. And that was. And then I was also experimenting trying to make wine. So I put a couple of grapes in an igloo cooler. That
couple of what? Grapes?
A couple of packages of grapes in an igloo cooler to see if I could make wine. You know what you do make?
Mold?
Maggots. True story. That's what you make. Not wine. So people
My friend
come
Stevie had, she moved out of her place because there's somebody left something or a rat died in the thing. And she was like, I'm smelling something weird.
Yeah.
And they're like, nah, it's fine. We'll check it out. It's fine. And they're like, oh, okay. I'm still smelling it. She goes, yeah, we'll check. Or we checked. Yeah, it's cool. It'll wash away in a little bit. She came home one day, and maggots were dripping from the ceiling,
like
just falling down. She saw them all through her tub and like floor, and she's like, what the fuck is – where are the maggots? And she realized they were raining down.
Oh.
And so they came in and cleaned it, but they didn't get rid of fucking whatever was there, so more maggots came.
I'll tell you this. I've lived in some disgusting place. My toilet was so bad in Pittsburgh that a girl who came from Mexico City said it's the worst I've ever seen. I thought
– Really?
Good for
Nice.
Me.
That's a level.
You always get used to every smell.
Yeah.
One smell I've never gotten used to is the smell of a dead rat. That's when we had the comedy store.
Back hallway.
Got worse and worse. I remember the one time somebody visited me, I said, oh, don't sit there. The dead rat's there. And they thought I was joking. And after an hour, they said, oh, you weren't joking about that, were
yeah,
you?
Yeah, like, it was super hard to get. They died in the wall. And it's like,
it's the one smell that gets worse and worse and worse the more you smell it.
It more decomposes.
Yes. Every other smell you get used to, it gives you a headache. It's really excruciating.
Yeah. Now imagine this. This is the dead rat. Now imagine living next door to a concentration camp where they're burning alive.
I thought you were going to go Black Plague.
Thousands of people every day.
You know what that sounds like?
And going like, no, things are seems fine.
That sounds like a German sitcom.
Living next to it, next to a rendering.
And your wacky neighbor is the guys at Dachau.
He works there, yeah.
Yeah, like,
they have to live nearby probably, right?
No, I would assume that's just giant.
They live in barracks probably.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Oh, living at the concentration camp? Yeah.
Or right next to it.
Yeah, they probably lived in the area.
I know there were people that lived in like homes like half a mile away.
That close?
Oh, yeah.
I thought it would be an industrial park.
No. You see no. Or it'd be – it's not like now. Everything – this is the 40s.
They didn't have zoning in the 40s?
Not in new countries they just went into. This wasn't in Germany.
I guess you're right. They weren't worried about –
cities set up nearby.
I was thinking about it. This was in Poland.
And everyone sort of kept their mouth shut.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, we don't – that's what they said. Like, how did you not smell anything? They couldn't do anything. So it's like,
and they probably just learned to turn it off. And they also didn't want to.
You get used to the smell.
If you complain, it's better to smell it.
Fucking Nazis. Hey, yeah. Fucking Nazis, listen to me. I'm talking here.
I'd rather smell it than be the cause of the smell.
Yeah, exactly.
That was, so it's a funny thing. You know, you think about it, you're like, oh, yeah, I used to be successful. Oh, well. That was my years of being a software millionaire, or months.
And so then you were done. You were just like, oh, I don't want to do this. I don't ever want to do it.
I was happy to leave.
What would you do if you got – now, this is not realistic, but somewhat – like if you got on a sitcom that you hated?
That's a damn good question.
Because it's sort of similar, right? Caparulo was on that
– It's not that I hated it. I'm going to make this clear. It wasn't that I hated it. It was disliking
super
it.
Super unfulfilling?
It was unfulfilling, and also I had this profound sense that I should be somewhere else doing something else. If you were on a sitcom, you could probably say, hey, you know what? I can leverage this to do other things I want to do in the entertainment industry. Now, who knows how long that rationalization will last,
but
that's something that could keep it going.
You can do other things?
For example, if you were on a sitcom, you definitely could do as much stand-up as you'd ever want to do.
Yeah, yeah.
You could book other acting rooms
for yourself.
Exactly. That's a door that opens. This was just the wrong house. So I kept thinking, you know what? There's something else I got to be doing with my life. And that was why I felt like I got to go. So if I were on a sitcom, I'd probably – another thing, too, is if you're on a sitcom, you're famous and people – it's gratifying in that way.
Yeah. Well, there is that. But I think if Caparulo was working on that, it got canceled.
Yeah, but you'll notice he didn't quit. Nobody quits.
Well, no, he didn't. But here's what he was saying to me. And I can say it's canceled now, so it's fine. It's like, I hope it gets canceled because I don't like this.
Yeah.
I'm not enjoying it. He didn't have to cross dress, but he's like, it's a show about cross dressers. We're taking all this heat from the LGBTA.
It's known for being
and it's like,
bad.
Yeah. And it's like, he just likes doing stand up. At some point, it's just not worth extra money.
You know, I see
no matter
that
what the job.
Yeah, so that's absolutely true. But this was especially bad. This is also like, I hadn't learned to compromise too, I guess. But also,
it's like if you're a prison rapist and you're like, you know what? I just don't like raping, but I'm stuck in this position of having to be
raped.
Booty
Warrior.
Booty Warrior?
You have to see Booty Warrior.
What is it?
It is on YouTube. It's a clip from Locked Up. I did a short film where I played the Caucasian in Willie Mack's movie, and the guys were talking about Booty Warrior. Booty Warrior was this prisoner who was a lifer in Kentucky who was talking about his experiences raping. He's like, you know what? I like raping. He said, you got all these men's locked up.
Men's,
and they get hard, and they get horning. And, you know, they can't bring women, so they're gonna have sex with each other. He goes, booty was more important than food. Booty was more important than water. And he said he would go up to a new prisoner, and he would say, you know what? I like you, and I want you.
Yeah.
And so we can do this the easy way, or we can do this the hard way. He said, they only said yes.
They said yes.
They said yes.
Scared.
Yes. But there was, you have to see Booty Warrior, though, because he goes, you know what? I like booty, and I'm a warrior.
Really?
I'm not going to, ain't no shame in my game.
Ain't no shame in my game.
That's what
God,
he says.
My people are cool at
yes.
every level.
This
even
guy
the rapists.
Made himself, yes. He goes, you know what? He's not going anywhere. He's going to be there for the rest of his life. Who knows what he did? My guess is not securities fraud. But he is the booty warrior.
And also, he's pretty much fulfilled. I love booty. Jeff Keith and Jeff Dye from Sean Kemp's Kids. By the way, David Taylor is on the improv team who won the championship.
We lost
two seasons ago.
Yeah, two seasons ago, finished the finals this season.
This last year, they opened it up to a lot of non-comedians. And
they didn't open
things.
A lot of non-comedians. They brought one guy.
The best by far.
He's
and
pretty
and
good.
Tebow had some people.
Yeah, but be honest, it was still a good season.
Booty Warrior does not come up early.
Look at Booty Warrior locked up.
Okay.
It's a little bit weird. Oh, I guess. Oh, you know what? I bet the Boondocks saw that because there's no way that.
He might be doing a thing. You know, I went to college with Aaron Magruder.
Really? Did you know?
I did not know him, but we did write for the newspaper the same time.
Oh, he's doing cartoons.
I wrote a column, and he was doing his column. An early version of the Boondocks?
Yeah.
Diamondback. An early version of the Boondocks.
Boondocks, yeah.
And he also wrote a column. And in one of his columns, he wrote, because somebody wrote a letter to the editor about one of his columns.
Yeah.
And this is how much of a conspiracy theorist guy he is, and just in general, how sort of crazy he is.
Here we go.
Booty Warrior. It's 3 minutes.
Fleece Johnson is the Booty Warrior.
We'll listen to this in a second. But he goes, in fact, let me get a splitter. He said, what was I just talking about?
The Aaron Magruder is a conspiracy theorist.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So because of this letter to the editor that was against his essay.
Yeah.
Or whatever it was. He wrote, I don't like that. And as a punishment, the University of Maryland will no longer get the Boondocks. So he pulled it from them forever.
Really?
Yep. And it was by far the best cartoon.
That's a real commitment.
Yeah. And he goes, no one gets the joy of this from now on.
This is like Wikipedia.
And he popped up again. And he still did his column. But he popped up again in the Washington Post when
really?
Boondocks was writing for the – yeah.
It's worth watching them. Now, I could try to do an impression of him, but I just do such a bad impression because this is years and years of Kentucky prison slang that really is tough to get when you, you know, the hardest thing you ever did was work in software. So,
yeah I want to get this. So, yeah, but I want to.
It's worth it.
Here's my system. My system is because I don't have feed or I don't have any expertise at all.
Yeah.
So, what I do is I'm just going to crank the volume over there and
I
put
like
another
that.
Microphone by there. So, if I just got a lot lower, well, I guess I'll notice later. But
it seems to me you'd be able to edit the audio in if you had even the slightest hint
even
of
the slightest
what you were doing.
Of technological expertise.
You need, like, let me put this out here. We need to get a nerd. Who is a fan of Ari, who can do all of the shit work. And in exchange, he gets to hang out with Ari and gets to see the magic happen with these podcasts.
Gets to see it.
I'll tell you right now, I'll put this out here. I hang at the Comedy Store, and there are some really slutty girls there. I will get you sex, nerd.
Who would hang out there just to fuck, besides Katie?
How about the girl who had three, not one, not two, but three babies that she put up for foster care?
Who?
Her name is Dawn.
Oh, that girl.
Yes.
Yeah, don't even say the other girl's name that she's living with. I don't want any.
No. She said about my friend, she said, he's the worst sex I've ever had. He said, you know, I cream pied her in his stairwell. What did she expect?
Oh, my God. Who is that?
I don't want to say who it is because I don't want to blow up his spot.
God. I'm going to guess one of two guys. I won't say the names, but it's either the guy that has these and it's like that, and or the guy with the Oh, didn't know that.
Nope.
Wouldn't have guessed that one. Damn, that wasn't one of my two guesses.
Yep.
Okay, let's see how loud this is, and then we'll start this, and if you want me to pause, just hit my
okay.
Do a little thing. I'll just pause it right there.
What's great about this clip is that it's narrated by one of the Locked Up producers, so it comes from like a Caucasian's point of view.
But when Locked Up visited Kentucky State Penitentiary, we met Fleece Johnson.
Okay, hold on. That's not loud enough.
But when Locked Up visited Kentucky State Penitentiary, we visited Fleece Johnson. And
Fleece,
I like, too,
do you think Fleece is his Christian name?
What's great, too, is they don't just interview Fleece. They interview a producer talking about Fleece as though white people wouldn't believe what they have seen just with Fleece. You have to have it explained to you in Caucasian.
Oh.
So look at the first person they have is a guy explaining as though it's so tough to figure out what's going on when you see the archival footage. So watch this.
These are the parts of my podcast, by the way, that I really enjoy, the meanderings.
Yes.
Where you just get off topic and go on. But this comes from a place of, like, I don't know where it comes
of
from.
Of love. Of love for the game.
A long time inmate.
Hold on, I'm going to back up.
But when Lockup visited Kentucky State Penitentiary, we met Lise Johnson, a longtime inmate who practices a very different kind of homosexuality.
Well, we have sexual desires, right?
What I like here is they actually take the time to subtitle it.
They subtitle it.
As though it's like some other language.
And they put his mispronunciations in there.
Yeah, yeah.
So it said, like, you got a bunch of men's locked up. Dot, dot, dot.
And they hawed, and they horn in.
You know this by heart.
Yeah, watch.
So and they get men locked up in one place. All of them get hard.
All of them get hard.
They, by the way, take the time to type hard in all caps.
And they capitalize hard, yeah.
As though to emphasize, they do get hard.
This guy's voice is awesome.
All of them hard and all of them got sexual desires. So what are they going to do? We won't let them have a woman. They don't have each other. Somebody's going to give us money.
Okay, what I like here, too, is what's interesting is this guy actually seems really reasonable when he's explaining. I'm like, yeah, that is true. Someone is going to have to give up some booty.
Yeah, so he's like, listen.
He's like a professor of prison rape.
Yeah, sort of he is. Someone's going to have to
It's really casual, too. Like, listen, look, play it again. Some more.
I want to hear him say that again.
The police told us, won't let them have a woman. They don't have each other. Somebody's going to give us booty.
What's great too is they actually subtitle ha 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 as though
smiled with his two teeth smile.
Yeah, he has two teeth. He has a really sinister grin.
That's a guy who did not have a very good I wish I knew the term for
upbringing.
No,
dentist.
But the Richard
orthodontist.
That's
no, you got to think Fleece Johnson.
Jokes are always better when you know the fucking words.
Well, ha 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 says Fleece Johnson.
So. Memorable story that the police told us.
Well, now they interview the lockup producer, who is the whitest person you've ever seen in your lifetime.
Yeah. Has a button-down shirt with three buttons undone.
No, we interviewed Fleece Johnson, who is... Play it.
...of the place and importance that has in a maximum security penitentiary. And he went on about it.
In his prison, booty was more important than booty. A man's butt.
In case you didn't understand, if you got a little sidetracked by booty, we mean a man's butt.
A man's butt.
By the way, what was the producer? It was
I don't know. Yeah,
not like, necessarily.
All I did there was this is just editing where he goes. Yeah. He tells one crazy story and then just goes back to him.
Yeah,
so it's like, why even cut away?
Yeah.
Jeff Dye and Jeff Keith.
Yeah.
Sean Kemp's kids, guys. I was interviewing them.
The
about
Pretty Men.
So pretty. Yeah.
Basically, the exact opposite of my interview.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff Dye. Jeff Keith kept not. Jeff Dye knew it. Jeff Keith was like, "I'm not that hot," as he would tell a story about these Maxim models who eventually said they would get sick of him or something. I'm like, "You deal with Maxim models. What are you talking about? You're an attractive
when
guy.
When you get a man attractive enough, they just become a woman. Yeah. They're just a woman with a penis."
But they both said that if they went to prison, they would never do any gay stuff and it wouldn't be about that. And I was like, here's the deal, guys.
You'd be raped.
Everyone believes that, but like, and yet it happens. So we're no different than those guys who go in there.
Here, let me make a point here.
Even if they didn't get raped, would you rape somebody eventually?
No, let me make a point here.
How many guys stay straight in a non-sexualized place?
The Comedy Store is as close as a prison that we're going to get here in Los Angeles. And make a point here. They would be raped immediately because that's their value, being pretty. I wouldn't be raped because I would be doing appeals and doing the filing shit. So I would steer clear. But their whole benefit to people is being raped.
I would be doing what you would be doing, what you did in text and software. Well, I'd try to convince the wardens that I could do these taxes.
No. I don't mean
things that I look like I could do until you figure out that I'm worthless and say, no, it's time for you to get fired.
That's Shawshank shit. People who do it for Borden. I'm saying we do it for the other prisoners.
Oh.
That's why you don't get raped. It's like, hey, don't rape my accountant.
Oh, yeah.
Don't rape the guy who's filing my appeal.
Deal for me, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm behind on these, but I've been busy being raped.
Yes.
Okay, let's get back to
a man's butt. Booty.
It was more booty.
Are you serious?
Having some booty. Important than drinking water. I like booty.
This is what I like too. It's like he eventually breaks down and admits it. He laughs a little because, you know,
this is what it was down there.
Fleece Johnson could have been, you know what? Life is absurd. We could admit the Lord has created a really ridiculous life here. But I will say what I like, and I
like booty.
So when I'm saying other people, I mean I in particular enjoy booty. So yes.
Okay.
Johnson went on to tell our crew.
Pause.
How he used.
What's interesting is he starts with a rationalization about, hey man, just because we're hard, just because we get horny,
well,
that's going to happen.
Hard. Guys are hard.
Then it goes to a whole thing about like how important it is, and then he just breaks down and goes, you know what? I just like booty. That's like basically the.
Yeah, because you're right. He is trying to say like, listen, these things happen. You get hard. You have no. First of all, also, who's walking around hard randomly? Just like, I got to put this in something.
Felice Johnson. So I guess the point is this, is that finally he breaks down and admits it. Once he breaks down and admits it, it's a really great interview. Watch the.
Okay.
To satisfy his sexual desires, especially during the 1970s and 80s, when he was most active and prison security was more lax.
When I see one, and he looks good to me, when I go to see him, I say, come here.
This is when he's talking about new people?
Yes. There's somebody he wants to have sexual
intercourse. This is pretty much just his version of the game.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm telling you what. I like you. I want you.
By the way, the subtitles
on that. So he
necks that,
them?
No, the subtitles on that were, I like you and I want you. They just had, instead of you, they had
cha.
C-H-A.
Cha.
And,
all we can do is the easy way out of the hallway.
You have to see him contemplatively stroking his jaw also.
Yeah. Like he's remembering how this goes.
He's just thinking it through, you know, like
for a second.
I like
you. Yeah, he's just kind of like, yeah, like he's rubbing
his beard. It's like he's contemplating a chess move.
Uh-huh.
And all we can do is the easy way out of the hallway. Some of the charts in your husband. And it was always yes. Johnson also had a warning.
I like how they have a picture of him talking to another inmate.
Yeah.
As if they're trying to make it seem like that's what he's doing right now. He's telling this guy.
This is the inmate.
By the way, there are things I could go to jail for. I could have been caught drunk driving.
Yeah.
I've done it many times. I try not to. But, you know, as I've gotten older, I do it less. But, like, there's lots of stuff. I've shoplifted a bunch.
Yeah.
There's stuff I could go to jail for. I could get in a rage and just beat on someone and get caught for it. And I haven't really done that, but it could happen. You've probably had things where it's like
everybody
different. I could have gone to jail.
Yeah.
If I showed up day one and somebody said, this is the way it's going to be. I like you
and I want you.
We can do this. I like
easy way or the hard way. I would say probably like, you know what? There's probably going to be some hard way involved here because I'm not ready to accept this.
Yeah. But then you would, I don't know. I'd be so scared of this.
SBR.org teaches me that you'd eventually be broken too.
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's the point of that website is that, you know what? All these things that we think are made of steel in ourselves, they snap too.
Oh, Boondocks definitely got this because later there's a clip that says Boondocks, the easy way, the hard.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's definitely.
And by the hard way, I don't think he meant this double entendre, but.
That's a good question. Maybe he was saying we can be a top or a bottom.
Oh, like, maybe.
That could
the
be
easy
it.
Way is you blow me. The hard way is I'm hard and I ram.
Well, it's
your
like
ass.
The Pet Shop Boys say, which do you choose, the hard or soft option?
Really?
That's from West End Girls.
Wow. All right, let's we got another minute.
Was Johnson also had a warning for the new generation of inmates. They might be asking for trouble from old timers.
You know, they got this thing where they save their pants. Pants they bought.
It's not often you hear a curmudgeonly gay rapist.
He's upset about the new kids. He's trying to give him tips, but
it's a style. They call it some sort of gangster style. You know, it's sexy to us.
That's sexy.
Yeah, this he's really
he's making fun of it, but he's also like, no, it looks great.
To me, it's sounding like Boon Shakalaka.
Yeah, it does.
Right? And see, but they were prepared for this, right? So.
I like even the closed captioning person gives up and just writes unintelligible. Like you
it's
know,
unintelligible, but they weren't prepared for this. I get what he said, but it's hard. But he was like, what? Unintelligible.
It's a style. They call it some sort of gangster style. You know, it's sexy to us, right? And see, but they weren't prepared for this, right? So you save your pants and her, man, somebody be up in your butt.
Does he mean metaphorically?
No, it doesn't mean metaphorically someone will be up in your butt. Someone will be up
literally
in your
butt. Yes. Wow. Well, that's unfortunate.
Let the lockup crew know that when he was in his prime, they wouldn't be safe from his advances either.
If y'all had been in her back then in them days and as much as I like booty, I probably felt one in y'all butt. And y'all was wrong for pants, man.
As much as I like, what is he trying to say? As much as I like booty.
Here's the problem with that: is he's saying, "Oh, I would have felt your butt." Hey, look, I don't want that to happen, but you know what? That's the option. Hey, if it's that or getting raped, I'm saying that getting my butt felt not that big of a deal.
So we get fondled.
He's even just saying, you know what? If back in the day when I was in my salad days,
a young buck, yeah.
I would have felt your asses as in, on the camera crew. But
and dare you
to say something?
No shame in my
this is
baby.
The best line.
This is nothing that I'm ashamed to admit. I am what I am. But I'm a warrior too, you know. So let that be known. I'm a warrior.
What's interesting is this.
I'm
this man
warrior.
Is in prison for life.
I'm a warrior, too. Let so that be known.
Yeah.
I'll tell you about the rapings, but let that be known. I'm a warrior.
That's the thing. He's clearly committed murder to get there, and yet the thing they have him talking about is not the life that he ended, but like what's with the homo stuff?
Because like, they're not concerned with the life. There's like people in here for whatever reason, but all we're concerned about today is this.
I'm a warrior. I'll say this right now.
I'm a warrior.
Yeah.
Oh.
I want to watch that Boondocks now because you know they used it.
You want to watch this one? The easy
well,
one?
Well, no, I just want to like get home and watch. Let's see. Oh. They have a whole clip. Let's see. I wonder how much of it they use.
Boondocks, the easy way, the hard way.
All of them gets hard. All of them's horning. You know? And they ain't going to bring no women's in there.
They're not going to bring women. What do you? That means he thought about it. And he's like, I wish they could bring in some women's.
Yeah, well, they're not going to. It's just not practical.
What's up, y'all?
I clicked on the wrong thing.
Yes.
A date with the booty warrior part.
By the way, it's interesting. Pause it.
Your life is going to be booty.
When you play the booty warrior clip, you cannot find a white person anywhere on the page on YouTube. Except
no.
for the Jesus Christ
oh,
is Lord
side,
singles
yeah.
date.
7-year-old takes a car on a joyride, black woman.
All of the related videos look like they were put up by some sort of hate group.
This first clip. After the Adult Swim one, that says 7-year-old takes car on joyride, and shows a picture of a woman, and I believe her name might be Joyride.
Interesting theory. Yeah. I think it's actually the 7-year-old.
Oh, very nice. Either way. Yeah, this might be word for word from this
interview.
Let's
play it, yes.
When you go to prison, the most important thing in your life is going to be booty.
Yeah, I better listen to
it. A man's butt. Uh-huh. Booty, getting some booty is more important than eating food.
Wow.
And
Magruder took this interview word for word.
He's doing an impression of it, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
No,
I'm not saying it's stolen anyway. This
no,
is
no,
clearly
no.
an homage.
You know what? This is, I think, clearly like a big thing in the in the community.
Or at least he's saying this is awesome. This is like when South Park did the fight scene from They
that's
Live.
An homage, yeah.
Like Punch for Punch. Like yeah. They're not stealing a good choreography. They're
no,
just,
that's perfect.
More important than drinking water.
By the way, pause it. 944 likes, 9 dislikes. Plus play.
And I tell him like this here. I like you.
He likes you.
And I want you.
And he wants you.
Now we can do this the easy way, or we can do it the hard way. The choice is yours.
What you want, Tom?
What's it gonna be? I ask you a question, Tom.
I can't hear you, Tom.
They don't want to answer. I can't hear you, Tom.
Don't answer.
I don't want to do this anymore. Sound like to me you wanted the hard way. Now we take it out of prison, so back up. You can't have my booty.
Whatever. That's hilarious. They just like transcribed that and fucking did it.
Word for word, an homage
and to Fleece. People in the back, like, you better know.
You know, if somebody knows Fleece Johnson, you can spend years suing the Boondocks with lawsuits filed with pencil stubs. That could give Fleece a lot of. Yeah, absolutely. Fleece can make a lot of money and kill a lot of
Mein
time.
Kampf.
Yeah, I mean, that's he's a writer now. I wonder if he's credited.
Maybe he wrote that. Maybe
which is official. A homosexual, sadistic prison rapist who's doing life in Kentucky now has more of a writing career than I do.
All right, we should wrap this up.
Okay. I don't know where it started, but I do know where it ended.
With this.
Yeah.
Fuck it. Nah, I had a fart. I couldn't fucking push it out.
Good for you.
All right. Well, thanks, David.
Thank you, Ari. I thought this was
so that's how you fucking became a possible millionaire and then fucking
yes.
blew it.
Now, are people going to follow me on Twitter because of this?
Oh,
how
yeah.
Say
your Twitter. What's your Twitter name?
This David Taylor. Check it out.
What was it before?
It was always this David Taylor. I don't know what you're talking about.
Before I made you change your stupid name, it was just like four syllables.
Yeah.
BF12.
Yeah, something like that.
And it was
that.
Like, David, come on.
Yeah, now it's a person's name.
It's too bad you couldn't get David Taylor.
I know, but unfortunately that's been, yeah, there's been just a billion of them.
This David Taylor, that's okay. And pretty much since you have nothing going on in your career, you really have nothing to promote.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
And if you do have anything going, it'll just be a writing job and you won't have to.
Oh, I see. Your point is that if somebody were to scrub, well, I'll tell you right now, this is the David Taylor promise. I won't tweet at people because I find that distasteful and annoying.
Yeah.
And I don't really have a lot to promote. Even though I did a lot to promote, I don't really care. So probably you're just going to get tweet after tweet
what
that
do you do?
May or may not
four
like.
Four jokes a day? Is that
it's like
goal?
Towards four jokes a day. And if you like them, great. And
does
if
that
you
mean
don't.
Already not doing the four of these.
No, I did four today.
Oh, okay.
It's like I try to do four. We'll see how. But I'm trying to do it four every day. But the point is this. If you like them, great. And if you don't.
There's going to be some winners in there. There's going to be some losers.
Some losers.
The losers aren't even going to be that bad. You'll be like, not funny. Move on to the next one.
Absolutely.
And you're going to get an occasional good one.
Occasionally, you will get one or two.
David wrote a joke that I think got me fired off a commercial.
That is true. That is true.
We were here watching the last week of the horrible Cowboy season, watching them blow the second game in 4 weeks to the Giants.
And they did a boneheaded play. And
No, it was a lot. It was a bunch of like boneheaded.
Yeah, one or two in a row.
And
yeah.
The joke was like, I don't know if I should write this or not. I don't know if it should be allowed. And you were like new to Twitter and you asked me.
I don't know if I should. Okay. Yeah, and I wrote it. Ari said, please write it and I'll retweet it. So I wrote it.
The right was what you. The joke was how many times.
I wonder how many times an NFL coach thinks the word Negro. Not that word.
He is
not
that word. He said, "How many times does NFL coach think the word nigger?"
Yes, that's what I wrote. And
just because as they fuck up, as they lose their assignment or just drop a ball, you must think that he must be like.
I thought it was funny. My friend laughed. It got retweeted by some people,
and I wrote back. I added it and wrote like. Like added a like tag to it in the beginning, and I said, "You must be watching the Cowboys game." Retweet at this David Taylor.
So then a couple days later,
I was supposed to start this commercial for Walgreens, and they said, "Oh, they wrote out your part." And I was like, okay,
seems unlikely,
but that's fair. I guess that happens. The day of the wardrobe, the day before we shoot. I booked this like 2 weeks ago, and then I found out from somebody who was on it. They said, oh, yeah, the client read something, a post you made that they thought was distasteful.
So that's to sum up, I am like negative $5,000 this year. I am actually causing people problems.
I told you to fucking write it, though.
Yeah,
I added it myself. So
I feel
like,
bad about it.
To blame.
I do feel bad. However, the funny thing is immediately after I tweeted it, I got calls from friends saying, take that down now.
Take it down immediately.
What are you trying to do? Just take it down.
I should have heeded their advice.
What is wrong with you?
I thought it was either that or the other post I made, which said that I see wiggers all the time, but I never see a wink.
Yeah, it was
I don't
mine.
Think that's offensive.
No, mine was
that N word, man. I'm telling you, it's an electric word. I've learned this over time.
Then there's also just some people that want to be offended, like
but they will get on the N word.
Yeah, oh, yeah,
you
yeah.
Can say, you can say porch monkey a lot better. You can say fucking any
come
sort
to think
of racial
it,
term.
That porn actress was not upset. She didn't think that was offensive. She never told me that was offensive.
Who?
The porn actress who was upset with me for my King Day tweet.
Wait, what was the King Day tweet?
It was gay rights leaders want their own holiday, but they
say it right.
Gay rights leaders want a holiday for their own murdered hero, but there is no I in MLK Day. The point being, it's a reference to Harvey Milk.
Harvey Milk, famous
assassinated homosexual.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure.
I in MLK.
Yeah, there we go. Right there. A little bit of wordplay. And that got are you trying to be horribly offensive? Because it's working.
And you're like, no, I'm just trying to write a witty joke.
I woke up. I like, oh, look at that. Somebody's.
Yeah, people get mad at me now. It's like, yeah, it's okay.
And somebody
wasn't for you. It's
yeah,
okay.
I've had so many people do so many things to show their rage that a few words on a computer screen.
I used to when people wrote me on MySpace about the Amazing Racist and how much they hated it, how it's fucking offensive and rude and fucking people like me.
Totally agree with them.
I would write back. I'm like, thank you so much. I'm so glad my art moved you.
Yes, I remember that. I do remember that when I had a webpage in college, I got some angry emails and I said, hey, great, thanks.
Angry emails are the people that write a fucking company going. I was against your fight. Like, they must read those. Like, who's this idiot?
It's the people who protested Married with Children.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what are you doing? Just change the channel.
Yeah, but the problem is they don't want people to change the channel.
Yeah. All right, David.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. My Twitter.
Twitter. This David Taylor.
Also going.
This David Taylor.
And I guess I might as well promote that Jeff Dye and Jeff Keith are still going to be handsome in the coming year. So check that out. That's pretty much it.
All right. Stop prison rape. Bye.
For the soul, you better give me something to fill the hole.
That's it. You guys like it? That was fun, right? That was a fun one. Got a little racist at the end. Not racist, but we just showed video of this guy who happens to be clearly... Actually, you know what? It's not racist at all. We just showed what it was. Although I'm forgetting what I said, so maybe it was a little racist. Who knows? But it was very fun. So thank you guys for tuning in. If you want to follow David, I suggest you do. He just writes 4 funny jokes a day, or thereabouts. Doesn't bother anybody with his... promotion like I do. I hate when I have to put out tweets that I have to promote something. I just feel like anyone who's not in that town is fucking, it's just white noise to them. And they're like, come on, man. My storyteller show, the next one's February 28th, by the way. February 28th. The one after that's March 27th. But when I have to promote shit like that, I just feel like people who aren't in town or in the wrong town never know about it. Like, don't care. So anyway, David doesn't do that. But that's it, you guys. Thank you for tuning in. Again, you can find these on Stitcher, on iTunes, or on my website, arithegreat.com. Go to arithegreat.com for extra features. I put like videos of the guests I have on or stuff we talked about. I'll click a link to those videos. The video we talked about, that guy in prison, I'll put that up there. And probably the Boondocks one too. That's it. If you guys have any suggestions, any gripes, any topics for discussion too, like somebody suggested, I forget who, somebody suggested something like, hey, how about get this type of person? And I was like, oh, I've never thought of that. The suggestion was those guys who dress up as superheroes, the normal people who dress up as superheroes. If you know one of them, tell them to contact me, but I think I'll try to look for one of them because they seem like, what is that, nuts or is it, whatever it is. Anyway, thank you guys very much for tuning in. I'm Ari Shaffir, Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank number 43, over and out.